this is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull freaking horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Right. Well, yeah. Okay. We are, and we are in fact a three-show family, which is the provisional show title for episode 197 of the Lotus Effect. Yeah, we have three shows. We have this one. We have Two and a Half Bens, and we have The Funny Thing About Murder. Yeah. So we are a three-show family. But this is the Lotus Effect that you tuned into, not the other ones. And as you all know by now, the show's made up. The content doesn't matter. And I'm Phone Boy.
As seen on Who Asked for It.
I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Because I'm Phoenix.
That's right. Well, and yeah, you know what? And we'd like to welcome those, you know, however many people we've got listening on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, RSS feed subscribers, people who've dropped in the chat. Yeah, we appreciate all of y'all for listening to the Lotus Effect here. And sometimes, sometimes we freak out a bit, you know, and we've been doing that lately.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
We're there.
I just had an orgasm. The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, we're all freaking out at this point. And it's not just the Lotus Effect, but we do know that the Lotus affects everyone differently. And so, however and wherever the Lotus is affecting you, we want to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
No, we certainly love hearing your feedback, right? And because we put a lot of time into the show, and honestly, like we operate on the value for value model, and it's not just in terms of podcasts, but in life, it's and there are three T's involved: time, talent, and treasure. Now, you can send us your treasure. We're cool with that. If you go to lotuseffect.show and click on the green We Like Money button and send us some cash via PayPal, or if you're into Cash App, we also have the cash tag $TheLotusEffect33. You can also go to our merch store at lotuseffect.shop, where you can buy crap that's been smeared with our brand feces. You can also do a one-time or recurring donation via the same site. Now, we don't accept donations via PayPal or Bitcoin we do pay PayPal, but we don't do Bitcoin or Lightning. Nah, we're not into that. All right. We're not in this about the money, but we do have some people that contribute from time to time. And Sharky's got his monthly donation here of $7.66, which means,
oh, you're the executive producer.
Yeah, so that's cool, you know. And we understand that not everybody's in it. And we're, like I said, we're not in it money, but we want to make sure that the investment that we make in putting this show together is valuable to you, right? And honestly, the thing that Phoenix and I find the most valuable is letting us know that you're listening to the show, right? And that doesn't take very long. But here's how you can do that. First of all, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you know, smash that subscribe button or follow button or whatever the fuck they call it these days, right? Share it with your friends, your people. We're trying to get the message out, right? Just about how
Yeah, make sure when you listen to the Lotus Effect, so do the neighbors.
That's right. Exactly. But so, you know, if you're listening in some sort of an app, yeah, you know, interact in that app and let them know, you know, give us a rating and review. I mean, I don't think we have any of those, and but that's fine, right? It, by you all doing that, I realize it's a small thing, and it seems, but it's like, well, you know, hey, it helps the algos, right? But certainly word of mouth is going to do better than an algo. So tell a friend, please. I mean, that's honestly, like, you know, yeah, share and subscribe. I'd rather you tell somebody, but you know, but again, this is, you know, we're trying to get the word out here, and yeah, that's we can certainly use the help in doing that. If you find any value in that, that's one of the ways you can show value back is to share it with your friends. Now, you can also interact with us too, right? Of course, we love the feedback, and one of the ways you can do this is that lovely social network called Mastodon. Yes. So yes, now you can actually, you can contact us on that massive dong. I'm phoneboy at lotuseffect.social. She's Phoenix, which is Phoenix at lotuseffect.social. You're probably going to find me there more than her, but that's okay. She does woman the email. I don't give a fuck at lotuseffect.show. We do give a fuck, but just not about a lot of things. Maybe I should set up hello at lotuseffect.show if you want to find an email.
You've been threatening to do that for ages. Either shit or get off the pot, sir.
Yes, exactly. I know. It's one, there's a lot of things I need to do. I like the Snarknado. I think that's going to be a freaking great potential.
That is a great show title.
Yeah, so yeah. And that's one of the ways, and honestly, like, one of the ways you can show us value is to show up in the chat. That was Dame Jennifer Whedon. We love her to death. When we're live on the air, when we're doing Rideshare Radio or 2.5 Bens, you know, it depends on which week, right? Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central. We actually did 2.5 Bens last week. Episode 7's available. Go to
you mean last night?
Yeah.
Not last week. Last night.
Yes. Okay. Well, which one of us drank last night?
That's what I'm kind of wondering, because you don't even remember doing a show, and I was the one who was hammered. I think we see where the problem is here.
Yes. Anyway, so, and then, but yeah, show up during the chat while we're on the mic here doing the Rideshare Radio 2.5 Bens again, Fridays at 9 Eastern, 8 Central on that. By the way, that's either on RideshareRadio.live or 2.5Bens.live. I have both of those URLs now. So,
And please be attentive to the time zone you're in and remember what day it is, because sometimes the listeners get a little panicked because they go, you're not doing a show? Oh, wait, time zones are hard.
Yeah, time zones are hard. That's right. So, yeah, we also do the Lotus Effect Friday, Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, this shit show, what you're listening to now,
yeah,
live.
Yeah, and after that, we do Studio 33. And I have Lotus Effect.live and Studio 33.live. They all point to the same fucking place, but that's okay. But it's great for marketing purposes, right? And domains are cheap, right? As Adam Curry taught us himself a long time ago. I'm scared to think about the number of domains that man has. How to join us in the chat? Go to lotuseffect.chat. You can use an IRC client if that's your thing, or you can use one of the web interfaces we provide. It's easy, but yeah. And even if it's the off hours, you can probably drop a message there, and we can certainly do some stuff. But, you know, another way that you can send back the ACK, as we like to say, is to call or text 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yes. Well, yeah, we were boozy last night, but we're talking about Google Voice here, because Google Voice will, of course, mangle the transcript and turn it into, and sometimes it becomes something funny and becomes a show title. We love it. What's the reason this week you want to call 253-237-3321? Now, you can call us and tell us you love us, you hate us, whatever, but you can also weigh in on our weekly topic. And this week, the weekly topic is that favorite thing on your bookshelf. Tell us about it, right?
You can even send pictures if you want to put them in the chat, if you're in the chat, or you can email them to idontgiveafuck@lotuseffect.show. Like Dame Jennifer did, we actually have some photos for her answer, and it is fantastic. And I have also included some photos myself. So during the weigh-in segment, you will be able to feast your eyes if you are in the chat, or you'll have to wait till the show notes come out to see what's on my or Dame Jennifer's bookshelf. And maybe some of you pedal heads will share what's on yours.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we definitely have some pedal heads that have shared things in our voicemail, which we'll get to when we get to that segment. But of course, Yeah, and also sometimes the transcripts from these things become show titles because, yeah, Google does such a great job, and yet we want AI to do everything, and it can't even understand a voice 100% of the time without any. Yeah, so
let's not start with the subtitles.
253-237-3321.
Tell us how much you hate AI.
Yeah, well, you can do that too.
Or tell us what the favorite thing on your bookshelf is, with or without photos.
All right, well, and with that, I think it's time to take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
I can take a lot of things, but I ain't taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
So I want to point out, you brought an article today during our show prep time and whatnot, before we started, you know, pre-coming all over the place, about, I believe it was a shopkeeper in Amsterdam?
Maybe, yeah.
The one that has the sign.
Oh, no, that's in Germany.
Germany. I'm sorry. Yes. Germany. I want you to tell this story before everyone counts on us, because I think it's very pertinent to the clip that we just played. I talk every week about the fact of, be respectful, don't be anti-Semitic, don't be racist. That's my job. But Phoneboy actually came across an interesting story behind the mic that kind of touches on that.
It's interesting. So this guy in Germany, right? And he runs a shop, and he has, there's a sign, and is an anti-Semitic sign in his window. Now, what it says in German, as I recall, is that, you know, something about no Jews allowed, no, you know, not anti-Semitism, nothing personal, I just don't like Jews. That's it, you know? And, you know, so just because, you know, we don't all have to like each other, but we should be respectful of each other, right? And that's really what it comes down to, I think, with a lot of this stuff, is it's mutual respect, right? Is that, hey, you know, you can be different and over there, and that's fine, right? Now, if you're going to get in my face and be different, that's a different discussion. But if you're over there being different, I don't have an issue, right? It's when we start arguing that, oh, I have to accept you for who you are, right? Well, I can accept how you are, but I also just because you are the way you are, I don't have to deal with you, right? I can make a decision to say, no, I'm not interacting with you. Now, does that make it anti-Semitic? I don't know the answer to that question, but I mean, again, I'm sure somebody, I mean, of course, the read the article says, oh, it's anti-Semitic, but I mean, but the guy, for whatever reason, he's not making any hateful, you know, he's just saying, I don't like this, you know? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those, you look at the story and you're like, where is the line here? I mean, I don't know. It's like,
I think I can actually, in my own opinion here, I think I have the answer to that. Because ultimately, you're not saying, you're not being anti-Semitic, because you're not calling them anything derogatory and like that. You're just saying, look, I don't like you people. It's like saying, I don't like Mexicans, or I don't like blacks, or I don't like this
and
or that.
And by the way,
I'm not calling you a racial slur. I'm just saying, hey, yeah, I really don't like you as people.
Yeah,
now,
let me take it a different way.
That,
right?
Can, like, be hateful, because I'm sure there are plenty of people who you may not like the, you know, the origin or whatever, but they could be lovely people.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I look at I treat people individually, right? If somebody's a good person, they're a good person. If they're bad, if they're not a great person, yeah, they're not a great person. Doesn't matter what skin color you have, right? Now, and I understand some people do that, and it's like, but you know, there's a difference between saying, stay over there, and I want to kill them all, right? There's a huge difference between those two things, right? And I think
that's where the lines are being blurred, though, is because if you make the statement, hey, I really don't like you, automatically, you know, we're clutching our pearls aghast, because the person who you could be saying you don't like obviously falls into one of those, wink, wink, protected classes. No. Point blank. I'm not obligated, just because you think you're a special little snowflake because of your color, your race, your creed, your religion, whatever the fuck you think makes you so goddamn special, that I have to put up with you and tolerate you? No. Pretty much good with judging people individually and deciding, you know, I don't care what your politics are, what your religion is, what your ethnic background is, or maybe I do. Okay? That's my decision. And ultimately, as people, I think that's what we need to start doing, is standing up a little more and being like, you know what? I just don't like you. It's not because you're black. It's not because you're tall. It's not because you're fat. I just don't like you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and there's other, and that's different from hate. And I think Bemrose is saying it right in the chat, is that everything is hate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. But remember, the opposite of love is not hate, folks. It's indifference.
That's right. So anyway, and I think with that little screed, I think we need to hear from Leslie Nielsen.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah, they're counting on us to tell them why the health segment, I guess, which is our first segment in the show, which will never, ever, ever be
brought to you by Pfizer.
You know, I can't even with the internet. So there's something called a Benadryl challenge on TikTok. What the fuck is this? And why is a teen almost dying after attempting to emulate this viral trend? Well, okay, so the Benadryl challenge is a reckless trend spreading on TikTok and other platforms where users down alarming amounts in diphenhydramine, which is the active ingredient in Benadryl, which in order to trigger hallucinations. All right. Although diphenhydramine is safe when taken in correct doses to treat allergies or as a sleep aid, and I would even argue that that's not necessarily the case, large quantities can act as a toxic hallucinogen. Actually, even just a little bit of it can be a fucking toxic to you. But anyway, according to the National Center for Biotechnology Information, overdosing can lead to confusion, seizures, psychosis, coma, or death. Now, the challenge first came to the public attention in 2020 after several hospitalizations and deaths were reported in the United States. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued warnings at the same time, urging young people to avoid the trend and calling on TikTok to remove the content that promoted it. And in the latest case, the mother of a South Carolina teenager discovered her daughter in distress with a heart rate at near 200 beats a minute. By the way, you don't need that much to get that. You know, the girl was hallucinating and later required urgent medical care. Now, according to reports, pill bottles and missing tablets were found hidden under her pillow. At first, the teen claimed to have taken only two pills, but a larger number was missing. And doctors at the hospital questioned whether the ingestion had been a suicide attempt. Yeah, the girl denied this, saying that she had been told by a friend that taking enough Benadryl could cause a high. People are so fucking... Oh, I can't even get
there. Actually, it is true. If you take enough Benadryl, you can get a fucking buzz. I'm just putting it out there. I'm not advocating to do it. I think you're a fucking idiot if you do, okay? But it is actually able to be done, just not safely.
No, well, that drug is unsafe at any dose. But anyway, the mother also reported that finding TikTok videos about the challenge on her daughter's phone. She said that she attempted to report the videos to the platform, but was informed they did not breach community guidelines. Okay, well, yeah, I guess. You know, I guess that's a level of misinformation they're okay with. But anyway, you know, medical professionals cautioned that diphenhydramine overdoses can cause serious cholinergic toxicity, producing symptoms such as delirium, rapid heart rate, seizures, memory loss, and in severe cases, organ failure. So tell me, you all, why the fuck would a medical system, right, that I went into a fucking ER, right, and I told them I took this drug, and okay, well, and so they gave me, what did they do? Because, and I was having allergic reactions. What did they do? They gave me more of it and then tried to give me a drug for something that they know it actually causes rapid heart rate on its fucking own. So.
Yeah, that was not cool when you had to come down off that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Seizures, memory loss, and in severe cases, organ failure. Yeah, this stuff's not good. I mean, I'm glad I don't have to take it at all anymore. Although every once in a while, I might need something, but I haven't done it. Actually, I haven't. You know, honey, I haven't taken a Benadryl at least since we got back from the cruise, if not further back than that.
Yeah, because once you realize what it was doing to your body, you just decided, no, you'd find other alternatives for managing the allergies, like the local honey, the cider vinegar. All of those things have, and we changed a lot of things about our life. We got new vacuums, which literally suck dirt that's probably been in the carpet since before we fucking moved in.
Well, it also probably gets everything. it gets all the stuff that the cat leaves around, which you know the cat.
Not to mention the way that you white privileged duster with this stupid damn vacuum, vacuuming lampshades and fan blades. Truly. I mean, you are a vacuum loving fool when it comes to this, but I think that also has contributed and helped to the reduction in your allergy symptoms, which therefore leads to less requirement for a Benadryl.
Yeah. So the FDA has previously warned that even modest overdoses can be life-threatening. Well, TikTok has said that dangerous challenges are not permitted on its platform, that it blocks related search terms. However, families affected by these incidents continue to argue that harmful videos remain accessible and reporting mechanisms are inadequate. Yeah, well, maybe get off the fucking social media platforms, but that's what
I need to I need to break forth for a second because Poem 435, a.k.a. Dame Jennifer Weed, a fantastic pedalhead, was talking about the truth about how you can get super high off Benny's because the heat of the Texas sun, she's holding a handful of Benny's in preparation of administering them to someone who they thought was having an anaphylactic reaction. And it melted transdermally enough in her hand that she got high as a kite. That's just skin through your skin.
Yeah.
That's not even an ingestion full on. Like, that's just wild. This is not. The pink pill is dangerous.
Yeah, I know. In small doses, it might, in the right circumstances, it may not be so, the benefits may outweigh the risks, but taking it long term is clearly bad. I mean, yeah, this is one of those things that,
it shouldn't be a first choice. Unless, like Bully Steed in the chat points out, using it to prevent or mitigate hives, yeah. If it's a life-threatening situation where you need to take that pill because you're allergic to a bee sting and you don't have an EpiPen because those are fucking $3,000+ that used to be $30, but I digress. Money-hungry bastards. And you wonder why we scream and holler and pound on our desks about pig pharma. Taking a life-saving medication like an EpiPen and jacking the price up to $3,000, and that is not a joke. You can look up that information. It's disgusting. The person who made that decision, I hope karma is absolutely giving them what for having done that. But the article here went on to talk about the FDA previously warning that even modest overdoses can be life-threatening.
Yeah, I know. As we said this. Yeah, exactly. And this is, yeah. And yet it's still on the shelves and, you know, sold in bulk at, you know, at Costco and, you know, welcome to Costco. I love you. But yeah, this is, and this next story, because you actually, it was funny because I had pulled the story about the TikTok thing. And then you found another story about using Benadryl for anxiety relief, right? Which is actually,
which almost seems, if you've ever had an anxiety attack, it seems really counterproductive to think of taking a Benadryl for anxiety, but we're going to hear what the experts have to say.
Goosefraba.
While Benadryl's drowsiness symptoms may feel like it reduces restlessness or worry, it doesn't treat the underlying causes of anxiety. Using it for this purpose can create problems such as some short-lived effects. The calming sensation wears off quickly, often leading to people taking more. That's where we can get into the overdose. Tolerance and dependence. Any medication can suffer from this, but regular use can reduce its effectiveness and increase the risk of habit formation. Foamboy, you actually talked about in your previous life in the PN-Dub.
Yeah, I did.
That
yeah.
I would say you probably fall into that category, that in order to sleep, you were chugging down a couple of Bennies.
Yeah, well, I was jumping time zones all the time, so it was a pretty regular part of my regimen to take it. And also for, you know, when I had to do, and I, you know, maybe I wasn't, I may have been taking it daily, you know, so I was taking it at least daily, right? Which is, you know, so and possibly if I had allergies even, you know, more often than that. So it's funny because anyway, you should have some in your system. Well, no, it actually, you probably shouldn't, unless you actually have a problem. Leave it out of your fucking system, all right? Seriously.
Yeah, this need to constantly medicate is absolutely killing us. Now, there's cognitive risks associated with this too, because long-term use, especially in older adults, has been linked to confusion, memory issues, and cognitive decline, which explains a lot of what's going on with you, Foam Boy.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean,
oh my god, I totally baited you. I fucking got you. You did not even listen to what I said.
Huh?
You totally glazed it, and
no,
I fucking
no, no,
got
but,
you.
But Bully Steed, Bully Steed actually mentioned something in the chat about the fact that there's links between using Benadryl and Alzheimer's, and I don't doubt that.
Yeah, she had made that statement earlier, and I do believe that completely. I was making the old person joke because you're 3 years older than me.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Uh-huh. Anyway.
Well, you know, this Benadryl shit also has dangerous side effects. Overuse or combining it with alcohol or sedating medications can cause confusion, hallucinations, rapid heart rate, seizures, or an all-out overdose. How? Okay, hold on, y'all. I got to take a pose for a second. How is an overdose a side effect?
I don't know. people decide they want to overdose.
I mean, I understand that death is a side effect of some medications. We've seen that. Simply put, while Benadryl might make you sleepy, it doesn't provide real anxiety relief, and it can create new health risks if misused. Hell, it causes health risks if it's used as directed. It's a horrible medication, folks. Period. Dot.
Yes, it is. But, you know, it's useful in certain, again, it's useful in very specific circumstances, but not something that you need to have, you know, you need to take
I love your stepmom. She says, I quit a long time ago, and I'm still confused. She's for the win.
Yeah, okay. Well, all right. Well, what's confusing to me is how we have multiple brands of cinnamon that are recalled ahead of the holiday season because of potential unsafe lead levels.
Beautiful. Yum.
Okay, so there are about, I think, 11 or 12 cinnamon brands sold under different brand names that have been recalled nationwide after testing showed that may contain higher than safe levels of lead. Is there any...
What the... I can't stay quiet, folks. As a culinary professional, what the unholy fuck is lead doing in cinnamon to begin with? Y'all understand what cinnamon is. It's a type of tree bark, folks. It's really... not that difficult, and you don't require lead anywhere in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Even grinding it. Yes. Pretty sure lead is not involved.
Yes. So apparently this is the latest announcement, which is issued September 12th, expands on early alerts from distributed by several retailers across the U.S. and could be sitting in home kitchens, which may affect seasonal holiday gatherings. Brands newly flagged include Jiva Organic, Superbrand, and Asley, among others. The products tested at retail locations in multiple states, including California, Arkansas, Virginia, and Connecticut, showed lead contamination ranging between roughly 2.03 to 7.68 parts per million.
Holy shit, that's a lot.
Yes. According to the agency, lead is not naturally found in cinnamon. Well, no shit, Sherlock, but it can enter the food through contaminated soil, water, or during processing. There's your probably problem right there. Health experts stress that even small amounts of lead exposure can be dangerous over time, particularly for children and pregnant people, where it may impact neurological development. There we go.
Sounds like you've had some lead. Were you chewing on the lead paint as a kid?
Yeah. I remember the signs as a kid where they said that the gas at the pumps contained lead.
I remember that. We are that old.
We are that old, right? So there's a list of affected brands in the articles in the show notes, but here's our question. How the fuck do you get lead in cinnamon? Just fucking tree bark, as we said, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's truly the point. And I love the way that every time something nefarious like this happens, they're very fast to be like, oh, it's got to be the water and the soil. And again, I'm going to say this for those who missed it the first time. Cinnamon is a tree bark. I'm really having a hard time thinking that the soil and the water led to this. Because it takes a little while for that stuff to grow. It's a tree, folks. Ergo bark. I do think it probably had a lot to do with the processing, but here again, we need to be looking into why is it getting in during the processing? It does not belong in there. Why is there lead anywhere near this fucking...
Weirdo answers the question. I think this is the most logical answer. Industrial cinnamon isn't bark. It's synthesized in a lab, and the lab is probably a byproduct of that. Well, no shit. There you go. It's not real cinnamon.
That's why you buy... yeah. Polystyrene. Lead and cinnamon because of climate change.
Yeah.
Well put.
Well done. Yes. I think, yeah, of course, because climate change. Yeah, that's, yeah, you know what?
See,
we missed that, Bully Steed. Thank you for pointing that out. This is, this is how we
I'm not going to say that I missed that. I was trying to ignore that merely because of taking the environmental science class that I'm taking. Literally everything we do is causing the fucking planet to die. It's propaganda.
How about you leave the fucking planet alone? The planet is fine, as George Carlin says. We're not. Maybe we should start.
Exactly.
We should start being better people. But anyway, that's later. All right. But I think we can move to the next story, which has something to do with bacteria and chemicals and something like that.
Oh, it's all about the chemicals, because human gut bacteria can gather up PFAS, those forever chemicals.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
plastics.
Exactly how do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics.
There's also a lot of death in plastics. Lurking in our nonstick pans, our rain jackets, and even our drinking water are toxic compounds known as PFAS. Not even going to try to pronounce that big, long scientific word. They're also called forever chemicals. You've heard us fapping about them for quite a while now. It's why we stopped purchasing bottled water and bought a water pitcher to filter the tap water. And my God, you can taste the difference in the filtered water versus the faucet water here.
Yeah, well, I think they also... Okay, when we first moved in here, The water here was not as bad. Something has changed with it. It seems like instead of putting chlorine in the gene pool, they've put it in our water supply. But anyway, that is actually what
The gene pool needs a serious dose of chlorine.
Yeah. Well, in any case, but yeah, I mean, not literally, metaphorically speaking, of course. But
no, of course. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So
I would not. Anyways, I'm going to shut up. I'm going to get myself in trouble because you know how I feel about the fact that natural selection is a thing in Darwinism. But anyway, these PFAS can take hundreds of years to break down in the environment, and they're increasingly being detected in human blood and body tissues. Now, researchers suggest that the PFAS can lead to several cancers and reproductive disorders, as well as thyroid disease and a weakened immune system. Scientists have been scrambling to find ways to remove the PFAS from our surroundings before they reach the human body. But one team may have found a way to tackle them afterward, too. Bacteria commonly found in the human gut, such as Bacteroides uniformis and Odorbacter... could possibly be used to gather up PFAS and carry them out as waste, according to scientists who published a study recently in Nature Microbiology. The researchers first tested how PFAS and other pollutants interacted with dozens of bacterial strains from the human gut, and they noticed that 9 species of bacteria accumulated certain PFAS chemicals very effectively. When grown in lab conditions, these organisms sopped up anywhere from 23 to 74% of the PFAS chemicals they were exposed to within just 24 hours. That's pretty impressive. The team suggests that those particular strains could potentially bind to PFAS in the body and eliminate them as waste from your system. And to find out whether the bacteria would collect the PFAS chemicals inside a large organism, the team used mice raised to lack a microbiome of their own and colonized the animals' guts with several human microbiome bacteria that were shown to absorb PFAS. After exposing the mice to various levels of PFAS chemicals, the scientists measured the amount of PFAS in the animal's feces and found that mice with PFAS-collecting bacteria excreted more of the toxic chemicals than those without the microorganism did. They also excreted more than mice given bacteria that accumulated PFAS less well. The study shows just how deeply PFAS penetrates a body and its systems, and applying the latest findings to humans would require more research, of course. But I think this is a step in the right direction, to be honest. I think if we can find a way to undo all the damage that's being done by people trusting our food system or having no other option. It's hopeful.
By the way, something else, and I think actually Bemrose had pointed this out, if I'm honest, and it has to do with the fact that we're talking about, you know, the forever, this is something that Bemrose would actually, if he didn't do it, it's the kind of thing he would point out. It's because it involves back of the napkin math, because of course you've got some environmentalists that say that we're basically all swimming in microplastics, and you know, and I think we saw something that was basically like, okay, that we consume the equivalent of a credit card, you know, worth of stuff in it seems like, depending on who you talk to, right, it's like every week, you know, or, you know, I don't know, in a lifetime or something. By the way, big difference between those two things, right? And so you start doing the
huge,
and you start doing the back of the napkin, and you actually get, and so of course people are called on this and go, you do the back of the napkin math, that means this, right? And so when they get called on their bullshit, well, you know, it's more important that we fight this rather than actually be fucking accurate in our statements. Yeah, you're fucking part of the problem, asshole. Yep. Shut the fuck up. Bring your actual problem. Facts. Don't try to, you're going to try and win an argument, win it with facts. If you get called on your facts and you're not listening and you say, well, it's more important. No. If you're going to make a decision, it should be based on something real. And these people,
especially if you're affecting the public.
Yeah. And these people are full of shit, stupid, full of shit and fucking nuts. Like, just,
yes, they are.
And I'm not saying that we shouldn't, you know, there's a reason we cover these stories, right? We're concerned about the fact that these man-made things are ending up in the environment and potentially causing issues. Now, it may not be as bad as some of these environmentalists say, and we should probably take some steps to do it. But, you know, how about if you want to convince somebody of something, try telling them the fucking truth. Oh, wait a minute. If you tell them the truth, well, it would prove that you're full of shit. But anyway, anyway.
Well, okay, so I want to add a little anecdote that was shared with me that because we're getting ready to transition out of the health segment, and this actually does deal with health. So I received a message in the back channel from a friend who's also a pedalhead, and she was telling me about an experience where her employer was trying to convince them to join a particular gym that they have an affiliation with, I guess. And after giving the spiel about how they should sign up for the gym and this, that, and the other thing, invited everyone to go downstairs and have donuts. To which my friend called these assholes on the carpet and said, excuse me, y'all are trying to convince us to use your gym, but then you're going to say in the next breath, we need to go down and have donuts. How does that work? No lie, the response that my friend was given was, well, I can have the donut and then go for a walk. Then it cancels it out. I convulsed after reading that text message for a few moments. And then once phone boy brought me back around, he was wondering what the fuck I was flipping out about. So I showed him the message. I'm like, are you serious? People, really? This is some very flawed thinking. This is dangerous.
So... Yeah, it is. Well, anyway, yeah, that's been part of the problem, right? Is it? Yeah, well, yeah, it's on one hand, it's like, yeah, if you do an healthy behavior, yeah, go ahead and encourage an unhealthy behavior. Yeah, that's real smart. Yeah. Now, again, but the gym people are much just like everybody else. If, you know, they want to keep you coming back every month. So that's why they pull that shit, right?
Well, that's why the health care, which is neither about your health nor do they care. That's why they keep pumping you full of these drugs, because they're trying to keep you sick. They're not trying to make you well.
No, and they're trying to make you believe that you're happy. I can tell you what, we're happy.
Oh my God, yes we are.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you! Now, this is a great story, by the way. It actually is funny because we watched the video that went along with this, but when we were putting the show together, it did bring a tear to our eye. There's a 66-year-old man. He fulfills his lifelong dream and becomes the oldest member of the LSU marching band. All right. Anyway, the dream never died, even after a wife and daughters and a decades-long career as an accountant filled up every aspect of Kent Broussard's life. Somewhere deep in his mind, the dream still survived. Now 66, he still remembers when it first took root in 1968 as a 9-year-old attending his first Louisiana State University football game. The Golden Band from Tigerland marched onto the field playing songs that rang out in the Louisiana air. The music and the movement, the pageantry of the college football band struck a permanent chord with Kent. Someday I want to be in that band. And he never forgot about that feeling. So as Kent approached retirement as an accountant, the Baton Rouge resident considered his next move. The dream still lingered, so he made an appointment to his... There, he made an announcement to his family to reveal his future plans. I am going back to school at LSU, and I'm trying out for the band. The first step was relearning the tuba, and it had been about a half a century since he played the instrument regularly, so he had a lot of work to do. He dove headfirst into practice and filled his neighborhood with the booming bass notes as he marched down the street. And, of course, there's a... Yeah, we watched the video.
It's great. We're going to put it in the show notes. It was so great.
Yeah. So Kent also started a strength training workout with a weighted vest and running about 25 miles a week to prep for the rigors of a marching band. Wow. Next, the senior enrolled in LSU, chasing his dream onto the campus by taking 12 credit hours alongside students nearly five decades younger. And the marching band tryouts were in early August, and he gave it his all. He just needed to wait until the results were announced to find out if he could chase his dream onto the legendary football field. There was a countdown in the tuba room, 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 10 seconds, and right at 7 p.m., the marching band list came out, Broussard told WAFB. 30 to 40 people were jumping up and down saying, "I made it." Kent had made the band, becoming the oldest member of the squad by 41 years.
Woo!
You know, you want to seriously, like,
go Tigers.
Yeah. So seriously, it's never too late, folks. You got something you wanted to do that you didn't do back then. There's nothing that's preventing you from doing that. Fucking do it.
I think this is a great story.
Yes. And it was funny because actually this is something you and I talked about behind the mic about something you might want to do kind of when we talked about this.
Yeah,
story.
But I'm not putting that on air right now. There's a lot more I need to do
before I
even think about putting that out into
the
world.
I understand.
Because I'm nuts at the thought of being literally basically almost if not 50. I would definitely be the oldest on that squad.
Yes.
But anyway,
exactly.
We're not talking about that right now.
But this kind of stuff is inspirational, right? It's never too, just like I said, it's never too late to do something. And yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah. And y'all do yourself the favor, watch the video from the news that we put in the show notes for this story. It really is worth it to see this man in his tuba marching up and down his cul-de-sac of a street and out on the field, and just it really warms your heart to see someone who has held that dream for so long finally realize it. Yeah. It was great.
Yes, exactly. Well, by the way, I think this next story is also pretty good too.
It really is, because a dog helped an injured wild crow and now they're best friends.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
Autumn Buck sometimes feels like she's in a Disney movie. Her border collie, Miko, recently took a liking to an injured wild crow that showed up in her yard in Portland, Oregon. To her surprise, the crow felt likewise, and now they're thick as thieves, she said. The two now run around together and take naps side by side. Sometimes the crow pecks on the glass to get Miko to come outside and play. I do have these moments of, I can't believe this is real life, Buck, 37, told the Washington Post. Wappa, wappa, wappa. So Buck named the crow Russell after actor Russell Crowe. The crow's middle name is Cheryl in case it's a female. They have no idea. Miko and Russell play fetch, scrutinize strangers at the front door, pass a pine cone back and forth, and spend a lot of time chasing each other. The relationship began in June when Buck got a call from her brother-in-law, Casey, who lives next door. A large bird nest had fallen from a roughly 80-foot-tall fir tree in his yard, leaving a small crow dead on the patio. Another small crow sat in a nearby rhododendron plant, trembling, staring at the dead crow and struggling to walk. Buck hoped the crow's mother would feed it and take it to safety, but by the evening, the crow was in the same spot. Worried a wild animal would eat the crow, Buck and her husband, Ted Simmons, made a makeshift nest by placing needles, twigs, branches, and leaves into a basket. They hung the basket about 6 feet off the ground from a tree branch and placed the crow inside. They fed Russell wet kibble and mashed up bananas and water from a hose. Every night, Buck said, she prayed the crow would survive. It did, partially because of its new friend and guardian, Miko, who is 5 years old, and chased stray cats from the yard and stayed by Russell's side. Now, despite their size differences, because Miko weighs about 35 pounds and Russell's about 12 ounces, they became inseparable. Russ thought Miko was his mom. That's so sweet. Buck tried to help Russell learn to fly by placing it on her arm or palm when she moved up and down until the crow jumped. By the middle of July, Russell could fly and scavenge for food, including bugs, blackberries, and hazelnuts. Russell slept in a nearby chestnut tree and greeted Buck and Miko on their front porch every morning. When the family was inside, Russell pecked on a glass door, sometimes distracting Simmons, 40, now that's her husband, from his marketing job, he worked as he worked from home until he would let me go outside. Now, there's more cute anecdotes in the story that's in the show notes if you want to read them. But when I came across this, I was like, oh, we have to cover this. This is just hands down why animals are so great, and we truly do not deserve them. Glad we have them. Love our doggos and our kitties and all that, but they're truly special, and we are not worthy.
Yeah, well, our cat is pretty special, too.
Oh, my God. He's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, well.
There's no. We'll talk about that in Toast and Jam. Yeah,
okay.
No.
No, okay, exactly. Well, but what we're going to talk about now is because I think we're done with the happiness stories. It's time for the Cavalcade of Stupidity with the Rev Cybertrucker.
Hi-de-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. By 1980, Bird and McDonald were well on their way to being a unique comedy act. Combining music with a very sick sense of humor, their parodies and rap songs were played by radio celebrities like Dr. Demento and Dave Pratt. Their candy wrapper song hit the charts just in time for the Hershey Candy Company to sue them in federal court for trademark infringement. Dave Pratt of KUPD in Arizona locked himself in the studio and played Candy Wrapper 99 times in a row, and was later called to Washington to apologize to the FCC, while Shotgun Tom Kelly of KGB in San Diego played the same song and received the largest fine in radio history, probably only topped by shock jock Howard Stern. From their 1985 album, The Dukes of Disgusting, this is Bird and McDonald, the world's dirtiest song.
There was an old farmer who lived by a rock. He sat in the meadow, was shaking his fist at some boys who were down by the creek. Their feet in the water, their hands on their marbles and playthings. And in days of yore, there came a young lady. She looked like a pretty young creature. She sat on the grass. She pulled up her dresses and showed us her ruffles and laces and a white fluffy duck. Quack! She said she was learning a new way to bring up her children and learn them to knit, while the boys in the barnyard were shoveling refuse and litter from yesterday's hunt, while the girl in the meadow was rubbing her eyes at the fellows, as girls sometimes do, to make it quite clear that she wanted to go for a nice pleasant stroll on the grass and hurry back home for a nice piece of ice cream and cake that stood three layers tall. And after dessert, she was ready to go for another walk down by the dock with any young man with a sizable roll of 100s. And
okay, you know what?
That's money.
Yeah, that reminds me of the song Polka Dot Undies by Bowser and Blue, by the way. That's kind of...
Yes, it does.
Yes, a vague innuendo and double-minute rhymes, as they say. Anyway, we'll play the whole thing on Studio
33. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Thank you, Rev. We appreciate
you. Yeah, that's
you.
Great. And yeah, we've actually got a couple of... We've got some queued up also for future, which is fantastic. So
we like having a healthy supply of stupidity.
Yeah, we healthy supply of stupidity. Well, and so speaking of healthy supply of stupidity, how did Rideshare go this week?
Ooh, yeah, but that would be bad mojo if I did that. I was joking behind the mic that I should have added a screeching car crash sound because I didn't work this week. Not because I wrecked my car. Fuck no. I'm not putting that out in the universe. We don't need that to happen. No, I just... it was a rough week. We'll talk about it in Toast and Jam. The TLDR is I worked not one tire revolution this week, and the number of fucks I have to give is negligent.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun, and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans!
And we hope those special plans are going to include calling 253-237-3321 and telling us what is your favorite item on your bookshelf. And if you want to include a picture, we would love that. So 253-237-3321.
Yeah. So what are you cooking tonight, honey?
You know,
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
Yeah, it's actually really simple. I pulled some steaks out last night. We ended up not having them. So I'm going to make a decision. It's actually going to be kind of an in the moment, depending on whether I want to turn it into steak and eggs or steak and broccoli. Yeah. Either way, there's going to be some cow carnage up in this bitch tonight. And it is going to definitely be...
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
Yeah, it's I do want to, before we move on to the other things in toast and jam, your fucking chicken tikka masala, honey.
Oh, my God. Are you still stroking it over the chicken tikka?
Have it in my fucking fridge? Hell yes.
Yeah, because there was plenty of leftovers. Yeah, like NGL. I got called a fucking tease by Sir Rev Cybertrucker, and Sir Bemrose agreed because apparently they're both hella jelly over the fact that Foamboy is a lucky man and got this homemade. And when I say homemade, folks, I made the ghee. I chopped the tomatoes after peeling them. I went wall out.
If you haven't seen them, I'm going to post the pictures in the chat.
Yes,
so.
Post the pics. If you think it looks delicious in a picture, it was even more delicious as a finished product. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So. It was truly an orgasm in your mouth. Like, so good. And as you often say, that if the original dish wasn't that great, that's why the leftover sucks. So that's why we don't have a lot of leftovers, because the dishes are that good and the leftovers get ate. We don't waste.
Yeah, exactly. And so yeah. And yeah, well, okay. So I guess we have written on, I don't know, I'm not sure how much of the week we're going to cover, but we will, I guess we'll. But
we can wing it. I mean, I'm good at that.
Yeah,
too.
Well, exactly. Well, okay. Well, let's start about the first one where, boot to the head.
Literally. Okay. So Foamboy and I are kind of pranksters and stuff. And I'm forever scaring him, screwing around, doing this and that. Well, I had headed up the third floor, or up the staircase to the third floor. And my timing was just a little bit off, because as I heard him coming, I brought my foot around the corner as a joke to be like, wapa! Yeah, well, wapa was a boot to the head. I literally kicked Foamboy in the face.
Yeah, it was
bad. I barely touched him. I want to point out.
Yeah, I was laughing. I'm kind of like, well, yeah, you can't. I mean, I could feel that you made contact with my face. I was wearing
so
my glasses.
Upset. Oh my God, I could have died. You guys, like, I felt so bad. I apologized probably half a dozen or more times. It was funny, and you kind of had to be there, but at the same time, it was like definitely.
That's how you know you fucked up.
I need not play like that with him, because my timing was definitely wrong, and that could have hurt him seriously, and I would never want to do that.
Yeah, well,
we don't need a podcaster down.
No, we don't. But but apparently, well, okay. So, I guess we we sort of have a situation. There's something in our lives that we've kind of figured out. If you text me that we should have dinner at Romo's, then that means that it's a really bad day.
And okay, I think we need
to explain how we got to that point.
Yes, okay. I really think we need to. So because it's my story, sadly, and I'm the one having to do the explanation. Would you care to grab me the hazy out of the fridge?
Oh, of course. Yes.
You know, because that's the beer bitch I am. So, all right. Very short, sweet, and to the point. I have been struggling for 3 weeks with a class that is mandatory for my degree. It's called Digital Forensics. And the instructor's amazing. I've had him for other classes. He's also my student advisor. I respect him massively. However, I'm way over my head in this class. My skills are not strong enough where I'm able to keep up. And no matter how much help I've gone to him for, and he's been available. Like, there's not anything he's done wrong. But TLDR, I can't do it anymore. It literally almost cost me my relationship with Foamboy. It damn sure was costing me my sanity, because 3 straight days in a row sitting on the stairs that lead into the kitchen and out of the house crying hysterically because I did not want to go to this class, because I just something upstairs, it was short-circuiting me bad. But long story short, yeah, somebody get Foamboy a lozenge. I know, I've tried to explain to him, like, if you have to cough, go in the other room, just through my microphone like shit through a goose. But anyway, I decided that I need to drop this class, which is, it's cool. It means elongating my career, my degree. I said I wanted to do it before I hit the big 5-0. Well, reality hit me before I hit it. And fuck it. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. It's like you either quit fucking school or you put this class off, finish strong with the other three you have, and keep chugging.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, and by the way, and the other classes, like, there isn't, and by the way, the topic of this, the class that you're in, this is something, because there's not any written material, and it's a little out of my area of expertise, and I don't...
Yeah, because it's not something you're familiar with, because
yeah, that's also, I also don't know what he's asking.
When you did your course
yes.
back 30-ish years ago, this wasn't a thing.
No, it wasn't. So anyway, long story short, it was just kind of like, yeah, this is, and
yeah, Sir Bemrose says, quote, quit fucking school. I'm not even sure how that works. All jokes aside, yeah, neither am I, because quitting is not even on the horizon.
Yeah, but
I it will literally destroy me before I quit.
Yeah,
that's just how I feel about it. So yeah, that'll happen in the early part of the week. So and it also contributed heavily to why I didn't work this week. So at the end of the week, we're around Wednesday.
This was actually on. I think the Rome was, is either Tuesday or Wednesday.
I feel like Romo's was Wednesday.
It may have been.
Well, I promise you, Romo's was Wednesday.
Okay.
Because I ate the leftovers on Friday.
Oh, there you go. Well, there you go. So
that's how I know.
So anyway.
Anyways, yeah, like Phoneboy said. If I text him, Romo's for dinner, ? He knows the shit's hit the fan. And I assure you, my hand, and I could probably post the shame pic of my hand as it's healing from the beating the shit out of the roof of my car when Phoneboy told me that we were going to separate because of what was going on with the school thing. I was fucking nuts. I was a psycho. I was worse than anyone's ever seen me. Because I could not, I just kept trying to squish myself into that box, folks. And I can't do it. I don't have the bandwidth for it. So ultimately, yeah, we end up going to Romo's. I've got to pee like a Russian racehorse. Walk into the woman's room and there's fucking water all over the floor. I'm like, you're kidding me. Okay. I walk back out. Now, we are well known at Romo's.
Yeah, we go.
We've gone there a lot.
Yeah, we've gone there a lot. The staff's really great. I mean, the food is. Yeah, okay. Let's put it this way. You were off menu.
I was fucking half in the bag that night. I had already started drinking before we went to Romo's, and then knocked down 2 Long Island iced teas, which, by the way, were delicious, sugar filled. Horrible for my body, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was about like maybe a shot of liquor and the rest just fucking sicky.
Yeah,
sweet.
I know. I took a sip of it and I went, no.
It was regret.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm not drinking that. That just doesn't, no. Yeah, I can't drink anything sweet.
The point of this whole fucking story is so I come out and the guy who owns the place, I'm pretty sure it's the man that owns the
place.
Yeah,
or at the very least, he's the guy in charge.
We'll call him the guy in charge. Cool.
Yeah.
So the guy in charge goes
by
in.
By the way, his name's Carmelo, I think, right?
I think his name is Carmelo, yeah, but I'm not
called,
sure.
Which is why it's called Carmelo's Rice.
Which is what I always get. It's delicious. Yeah. Don't hate me because I'm beautiful. So he sees what's going on. He goes in and has a mop bucket and a mop in there. Okay. I start mopping the floor, folks. I'm like, fuck it. Ringing out the mop. Mop it. I'm in there for probably 10 minutes and not a joke. I'm half in the bag, loving life, just mopping a bathroom floor at the Mexican restaurant because I could. Literally, it needed to be done. He wasn't really sure when he opened the door and saw me mopping. I smiled. I said, thought I'd give you a hand. And then I walked out of the bathroom. I don't know. I can't explain why I wanted to do that night.
Well,
it just seemed like, here's the thing, it seemed like the right thing to do, because if any other lady needed to use the bathroom, having to walk through the water would have sucked ass.
Yeah, well, and also,
and I had to wait for my food anyway.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
What the hell?
Yeah, the kitchen was running a little late, so that was one of the few. I mean, usually that place is pretty prompt. It seemed like
it was pretty busy though.
He actually came over and apologized. Said, the kitchen's a little backed up. You'll be out in a few minutes, right? Kind of thing. So
yeah, but it was worth it. It was really yummy.
Yeah. So
it often is.
Yeah, it is often often is. But yeah, often it's kind of one of those things that helps sort of, you know, it's a good reset and it gets us out of here. And unfortunately, living in a condo, there's really, there's just sometimes we just need to get out of the house. And
as much as we're not like people.
Yeah. Exactly.
Every once in a while, you got to mingle among the people.
Yeah, exactly. So it was actually, yeah. So I mean, it's kind of it's a funny story caused by a lot of.
Well, it's bizarre. Yes. Most people would not, it doesn't matter how local your joint is that you visit. Most people would not go in and just start mopping the fucking bathroom floor because it needed to be done because they had an issue. That's not something normal people do. But I'm perfectly fine with not being normal. I'm perfectly fine with being the person who just did that. I don't know why.
There's nothing wrong with that because, okay, well, it goes into sort of, I think, ethos that we have is try to leave it a little better than you found it, right? And that was one of those situations. It's like, okay.
Well, I also thought of it as a value for value because the prices at that place are really good. Let's just face the fact you and I can nosh the fuck out for a very good price.
Yeah, this is one of the advantages of living in a quaint southern town. Everything the local restaurants aren't that overpriced. So that, and, you know, we have found a couple places here that are kind of okay, but, if we're having the kind of night that we're having,
I think it's funny though that like Mexican food is the like go to, and I think that might actually be a great subject for next week's topic of like when you're having just that night, what's your go to? Is it Indian food? Is it Mexican? Are you going Italian?
I would say go to cuisine type.
Go to cuisine type, exactly, because it's funny. It leads into circles back to the conversation about the chicken tikka masala that I made. This was the second Indian dish that I've attempted. The first one was a chicken korma, and it came out okay, sorta. I didn't use nuts in this one because Phone Boy can't. It triggers his allergies.
Yes, and we're not willing to take that risk. Yeah, so
not even though I've got like a half a large container of cashews hanging out in the pantry, I did not make cashew milk to make this recipe. It's the only thing I didn't do. Mm-hmm. Everything else other than if I had to do it again, I would probably fire grill that chicken instead of doing it in the oven.
Yeah.
But that recipe was out of bounds. It was so delicious. And it's amazing how I can bring you on an amazing world journey and never leave the house through my kitchen, because I can, you know, I can prepare you a fine Italian feast one night, you know, bring you to the Orient the next. And it's one of the things you love about me, as you've said.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of a reason why one of the things we've been talking about is actually the cafe you hear us joke about. Well, it's not a joke. We actually are thinking about making this happen. And Dame Jennifer Wieda, I'm going to give her some bell on that and some karma, because she gave me a great idea when we were talking the other day. I want a brick and mortar for this, but starting out in like a food trailer, a concession trailer, probably would be a better choice as far as financially, to see if I can get my legs under me with the cafe, if my product is something that's going to be desired by people, because there's no part of me that has an issue with serving a chicken tikka masala for lunch one day and a Mexican skillet the next. Every Friday, it's shashuka for breakfast, you know? I want people to come together through the food that I provide, and not just come together, but know that the food that you're eating is clean. It's not full of sugar, grains, seed oils. It's been sourced locally, probably, because that's a lot of what the menu for us is based around. Is during the wintertime, soup is going to be, you know, and more hearty things are going to be what's on the menu. During the summertime, salads, come into the ethos, because that's when the vegetables come in. I think the world is ready for this. And Foamboy and I have talked a lot about it. So, you know, keep on the lookout, because this is going to be a thing. And we're going to make it a huge thing. And y'all are going to be a part of it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, this is a much longer term plan. I think there's a, but this is something, yeah, we've been joking about this for a while. Even around here, we've been kind of looking for, you know, it's been a joke. But I think the reality is that, you know, that people are starting to wake up and realize that maybe that, you know, that maybe all of that stuff is fake and gay, and maybe we should do something about it and try to find something that isn't fake and gay.
Well, and I would really like to be able to show people that you can still have big flavor in food without it being weighed down by sugar and all these seed oils that are blowing you up like a balloon in your joints. I can make all of these foods and use the oils that don't blow you up. The olive oils and the avocado oils, and make it taste good. That's the biggest problem I think people have with, quote, healthy food. When it comes to, like, almond flour and avocado oil and all of that stuff is, yeah, avocado oil mayonnaise has a definite different flavor than your Hellmann's, okay? By far.
Yeah, especially if you do it with Villa Capelli olive.
Oh my God, that's another thing, because I make our mayonnaise. We don't buy.
Yeah, I mean, I still have some
commercial mayonnaise. Yeah, we still have some, but yeah. Once it's gone.
Yeah, I'm not buying anymore because honestly, like, we don't even use that much mayonnaise, and so, like, but yeah, I like the fact that, I mean, yeah, we make it in the kitchen. This is, by the way, I mean, this is something I think is. We didn't necessarily talk about this, but this is something that, you know, this is one of the ways that actually, like, Phoenix and I actually connect with each other is in the kitchen. Now, she's, you know, she's the brains of the operation here, right? She knows what's going on. She basically, if she tells me what she needs done, I can generally do it, right? I'm not a, you know, in terms of just like the, you know, prep work and clean, keeping the kitchen clean and all this other stuff. And we're both working together in the kitchen, kind of doing what we're doing. And it's, you know, and
it's a dance. Yeah. It truly is a dance.
Yes. But it's something,
especially with the size of our kitchen.
Yeah. But it's something that, okay. But, and I've always said to you, like, look, honey, you should be in the kitchen. In fact, when we're working through a lot of the issues that we had, right. One of the things we need to do is actually spend some time in the kitchen, right? Because we actually, you know, it's one of the ways, you know, because it's your passion, right? That you have, and I like eating, and honestly,
we're a match made in heaven.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I never got to do any of this stuff. I think you asked me the question one day, how do I learn to cook? Well, my mom taught me how to cook eggs, and that was pretty much it, right? I figured out the rest of it on my own, right? So, but I think
he's not allowed there, Sir Bemrose.
No, God. These people.
I think Sir Bemrose is letting us know that we probably should hear what the Petalheads have to say about what the favorite thing on their bookshelf is, because it is definitely time for the world to wake up.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321. And oh, by the way, the world needs a wake-up call. That, I don't know, listening to that clip in my current state of mind. Yeah, we're going to be the fucking wake-up call, folks. Somebody's got to do it. All right. Meanwhile, let's see what you all had to say about that favorite thing in your bookshelf. And honestly, I got to figure out what the favorite thing on my bookshelf is.
Well, before you play the voicemails, I actually have a that came in. I do. I have a text and a email. The text came from Tigger. And what she has on her bookshelf, her favorite thing, is pictures of her mom and dad and her, and of her great nieces and her pupper Maisie. May she rest peacefully. Maisie was a doll. Oh my God. She was part pity. She may have been all pity, but my God, she was a sweetheart. I love that dog. I hope she's in a better place. And then we have Dame Jen, who is absolutely out of her mind. I love this woman. She sent me an email because it contains pictures, which is awesome. And she said, sending an email so that you can post these pics in the chat or the show notes, They are STD stuffies, folks. This is so great. She said, I got these, I don't know how many years ago, via a Reddit Secret Santa event. I was actively working in and going to school for healthcare at the time and laughed hysterically when they came in. Love y'all. Talk to you later. Bye. So we're going to post, I'm going to post, these pictures of some herpes and chlamydia, and they are stuffed animals. They are truly, they're horrible. I love them, though. Like, they're the kind of horrible that you just can't help but have to have. And I actually went on Amazon, and they still sell this shit. It is fantastic. So I'm going to post this in the chat as soon as possible here while you play some voicemails about what other people have on their bookshelf.
Okay, so we also got a text from Mama, and so I'm gonna go ahead and read it here. So the favorite thing in my bookshelf would have to be The Godfather. Although I've seen the movie countless times, I wanted a dead tree version to put up and keep. I agree with that, Mama. By the way, y'all want to keep something, buy a physical copy of it because, you know, yeah, that doesn't fucking disappear. Unless somebody takes it. But now, I've actually intended for this to be a gift for someone, but we have since parted ways, so I decided to keep it. You know, I mean, if you're going to keep something, you're going to keep a movie, The Godfather is definitely a good movie to keep. So I definitely like that. But okay, so now I think it is time for voicemails. And we have a few voicemails here. So we'll start with this one right here.
Hi, how good, Ember? Doing it good. End of season, summer. Yeah, it's nothing like official. It's nice to get like swimming in though. Like, not super, my wife's more keen into wanting to go swimming and hitting local watering holes and whatnot. But, once I get out there, it's fun. But yeah, just making sure, cause we didn't really get out much this summer for, those activities. So definitely, getting those in before even if the water temperature doesn't get cool. The ambient temperature gets a little too cool. So we're able to actually get away and do that this last weekend, which is why I didn't call in, actually. So anyway, yeah. So I guess that would be a thing. But anyway. But yeah, nothing like, hey, like an official, like one thing only. But yeah, just kind of try that carpe diem, you know, and then you got the getting dark earlier and all that jazz. So making sure, just trying to enjoy the night as it's still light out. So anyway, that's it. All right. Phoenix, fun boy, love the guys. Dead interest. And whether or not you're cleaning out a shed or the shed's cleaning you, go ahead and give a hottie hottie. Cacao!
Thank you, Mr. Christopher Bettles. That's great. We love you too, man. You are one of the faithful pedal heads and an absolute scholar and a gentleman. Damn,
absolutely.
Skippy.
And in fact, he called in again because that was a make good. Here's the one for this week.
Oh, there you go.
Phoenix Funboy. Salutations, greetings. There's a fanboy on me, so I could turn it off, but I'm not going to. Favorite thing on bookshelf. Well, I'm going to go with the unobvious one, but books. I like books. Never been a big reader, but for a while I got 2 books a month, and then I didn't read anything for like a year or so, and now I'm just like, okay, minimum 2 pages a day kind of thing, no matter, kind of deal. So just to make progress. But yeah, we're going to go with books. When the cat hops up on top of the bookshelf, the cat. And then just little knickknacks. Bookshelves are a great place for knickknacks. I just got some like seashell stuff and just little collectibles that we've acquired here and there. Just a great place to put those things up and, you know, remember those things. I don't know, looking over, there's some sriracha paraphernalia that people have got us and nothing special but some cologne I throw on in the morning for work. Yeah. You smell decent. Yeah. Oh, I got some Seinfeld Funko Pop things. They're all kind of tilted and whatnot because they don't stay up the greatest, especially then when the kids play with them. So, yeah, just little dry miscellaneous little things collected when I was more of a kid, but still just kind of there. Just little, you know, memories and knickknacks when they're, you know, something that actually means something to you. You like them. So, yeah. But even when I was younger, back in the day, you know, like living at home and stuff, still would have the bookshelf and just push all the books back and then put the knickknacks up there when you could only have one room kind of deal. You know, you had your one bedroom and that was it. So, yeah. Just little things that make you smile or think of people or places you went or want to go or whatever. Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's pretty deep here. But anyway, always, guys, stay dangerous. And whether or not you decide to lay back and take a nap real quick in the middle of the day, or you just keep on trucking, go ahead and give a hearty, hearty. Oh! The cat just looked at me.
Ha, Mr. Christopher Battles. Hell yeah. So I want to address a couple of things that he said. The Funko Pop thing. I have, thanks to Phoneboy, I have 4 Funko Pops of San Francisco 49ers players.
And thankfully, because she lost one of them, we temporarily lost one of them. I now have one of them in here.
So. That's right. You have a George Kittle. And, I love my Funko Pops. I'm all about that. They're Chris Battles. Hell yes with the Funko Pops. Love those. The Nicky Nacky things. So I love this because I took a photo of my bookshelf that I will share in the chat with you all. Some of the things, because you were also talking about books on your shelf. I personally have a couple of very near and dear books on my shelf. I have a collection of Edgar Allan Poe's poetry, because I'm a huge fan of Poe. I also have a copy of Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash, as well as Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, The Cuckoo's Egg by Clifford Stoll, and The Case Against Sugar by Gary Tobbs. All fantastic reads. If you have not read them, where the fuck have you been? The ones that, however, you don't see is I also have and need to put back up Orwell's 1984.
Yeah.
I think, I know on my Audible I have a Fahrenheit 451, but I do not know if I have a physical.
I have a physical one.
You have a physical. Okay. I have your copy of Snow Crash, actually. Yeah, you have a paperback. I have a hard copy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I love this book so much. I have it on my Audible, not boosting Audible, because they're not paying me. Fuck them. But I love my Audible subscription, especially because I can listen to Snow Crash while I'm driving, and the images that it, like puts in my head are just like, yeah. I love that book.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the stuff I have on my bookshelf, because like I said, I'm going to post a picture. I have an adorable fairy incense burner that my youngest son got me, and a unicorn lava lamp, as well as a pair of Valentine's Day gnomes, because I love gnomes. Phoneboy got those for me. I have a color-changing salt lamp. The bookends that I have are polished, what do you call those things? Yeah. They're the crystal things.
Yeah, exactly. The
geodes.
Yeah, the geodes, yeah.
Yes, I have geode bookends because I love geodes.
I mean, that's actually something we did for, you know, and when we were, you know, you actually have like an actual desk.
I do, and I have this great color-changing clock also that I recently got, as well as some charging equipment. One thing I want to point out, in this picture, there is a white Zippo with a snub nose revolver that has a floral pattern. My youngest son also purchased that for me. I love that lighter. That's why it's sitting there, because it's a beautiful adornment.
Yeah. So in terms of myself, I'm kind of looking around. I'm going, I don't really have a bookshelf anymore. I mean, I don't, because almost all of the book. I mean, there's, I've got a lot of books. I've actually bought a whole bunch of books since I've moved here. When I pretty much left my, you know, the books I had, and I took some of the books, but I really did, you know, there was a few books that I wanted to keep, and I did, but I left a lot of books behind. And I guess I could say the favorite thing in my bookshelf is the books I wrote myself, but that's...
Which I have in my nightstand. Fight me anyone. Nobody's getting those fucking copies. Those are being kept by the keeper here. I love the fact my man wrote two books. What has your man done today? My man wrote books.
Yeah. So anyway,
I'm sorry. That sounded really twatty. All right. But then again, to know me is to love me, and that's who I am.
All right. Let's see what this caller had to say.
The question of the day is, what is your favorite thing on your bookshelf? That's tough. My bookshelf is definitely not anything compared to, like, you know, Dame Bemrose or something like that, but my bookshelves are 6 feet wide, 6 feet tall, you know, 14 inches deep. There's a lot of stuff here. Man, if we're going with book, favorite book, might sound kind of funny. L. Ron Hubbard, Battlefield Earth. I have that book here. Absolutely love that book. The movie was just steaming hot garbage. It was awful. But the book was fantastic. Loved it. But if you're not talking books, I got a lot of other stuff on here. I have one whole shelf dedicated to, like, Lego stuff, like Lego figurines and some of my kids, like, you know, Lego flowers that they've put together and stuff. So that's really cool. I even have a Lego camel here, which is pretty hilarious. Up on the top shelf, I have a pirate ship that one of my best friends gave me years and years ago, probably 15 years ago, a little assemble-yourself pirate ship that I have up on the very top. I have a park ranger's hat on here that was a memento from a play that I was in, like, junior year in high school. And, of course, it was a school prop, so I wasn't allowed to take it home. So, you know, one of my best friends stole it, like, 2 years later and brought it to me. Yeah, I think that's probably the highlight. My wife has some pottery on here that she did from high school. That's pretty cool. Oh, I have some legit original paper Cards Against Humanity. That's pretty cool. Pictures of the kids. There's a lot of stuff on here. I've had hard to say what my favorite is.
There you go. Well, there's, yeah.
I think this ended up being a who's who and what's what of what's on your bookshelf, as opposed to what your favorite thing is. But you know what? I love that.
Yes, exactly.
I love knowing what is on people's bookshelves. And I am extending my jealousy to Bemlet right now. That's a goddamn bookshelf, bro. Wow. I was telling Phoneboy behind the mic, when we have the house, we need to have an actual bona fide library.
Oh, yeah.
With how many books are near and dear to us. And,
yeah,
you know, you being a Cali guy, books are important to Cali guys.
No, books. Well, here's the thing. I'll explain my thing on books. Right. First of all, this is one of those things, like, if it's not on a computer, right, that's a good thing, because we know, like, you know, like, if I have a book and a physical book, right, it's, as long as I don't damage the book, it'll be there forever. If I get an electronic book, who knows if I'll even be able to access it the next day, if Amazon or Tom Collins or whoever else decides to fucking, you know, oh, you can't read that anymore, it's wrong thing, so we're going to remove it from you. Why do people buy this shit that has it? Because, like, you can lose it, you know?
Sir Bemrose says hard to DRM dead trees. He's not wrong. Cotton Gin says don't give him any ideas.
That's right.
He's not wrong, because these nefarious bastards.
So I don't, there's not a whole lot of books I want, but the books I want to own them. And the only way you can own something is a dead tree copy, as they say.
We were actually joking in the green room last night about Anathem and how massive that handwritten manuscript is for that book. The book itself, though, it could be used in hand-to-hand combat as a deadly weapon. How many pages? Over 900, I think you said this book contains.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
It's huge.
Yes, it's.
You
it's,
could it, knock a motherfucker out with this thing. Yeah, seriously.
Unfortunately, the book, if you've ever read Anathem, it takes probably about, you have to get through about five, you have to get about halfway through the book before it actually starts getting interesting.
Oh my God, it's a sandpaper fuck of a read. Really is.
Yes, but here's the thing. And I remember years ago, I had taken the children. To I think it's now called MoPop in Seattle, but it was the Experience Music Project Science Fiction Museum back in the day, right? And they had a Neil Stephenson exhibit. Yeah. I mean, first of all, this dude just looks like a badass. Second of all, when you stand, they had a little exhibit there behind glass where he had, you know, something that represented basically the handwritten manuscript for Anathem. And it's like, it's a stack of paper. It's a couple stacks of paper, one of which is, you know, as tall as he is, right? I mean, this is some serious shit, right? That dude's a bad, I mean, that's a badass motherfucker thing to do. I mean, in terms of it, but it's
but he's a fantastic author. He's very colorful.
Yeah, but in any case, like I said, sometimes his stuff is a little thick, and yeah, it's that Anathem's not the first book like that. I think even like some of the other books I've read, you know, Snow Crash was one of his best books. I mean,
I love Snow Crash all day long. I'm so blessed that you brought that into my ethos.
The only book I've ever read that I was hooked within like the first three pages.
Yeah, Cryptonomicon. I've got it DL'd on my Audible. I haven't pulled the trigger on it only because of the fact that he's so fucking wordy that I've got to commit. That's a serious commitment if you're digging into a Neal Stephenson novel, especially if it doesn't grab you from the beginning like Snow Crash did me. Like, that was just a wild ride. It grabbed you from the first moment and just never let go. It was amazing. If I don't have a book that grabs me that way, I get bored real easy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah. So, I yeah, in any case.
Well,
yeah.
Cotton Gin, due to the fact that I ride around all day with ungrateful people in the back of my car, it kind of makes it easy to do audiobooks, TVH. Yeah. And then if I find that I really like the book, like I did the Snow Crash thing, I'll buy the physical copy because then I have it and I, at any point in time, can crack it open and enjoy the ride.
Exactly. Anyway, so I think it's, I think we've got more calls here. And in fact, for more pedalheads even.
Hello, this is everyone's favorite Bemrose calling you from Legion Park, where we have gone batshit crazy with a bunch of RC vehicles. We now have an impromptu ramp out of a collapsible little table, a plastic lid for a bin, and those are on top of, shit you not, two bags of batteries. I don't know if you can hear these, but half the time they're on their backs. These vehicles spend more time on their backs than most men that I know of. Seriously, I've got picture proof. I mean, Kim, she's fondling hers like there's no tomorrow. I mean, she's inspecting it. Hey, Kim? Is it on its back?
No.
Why is it not on its back? She doesn't know. I mean, and then we've got drones flying around. We've got a little helicopter. We've got so much weird crap going on. I think we could go ahead and film it for an RC porno. Anyway, somebody tell me what today's question is so I can call back with an answer for it. I'm not home, so I can't get the guild going on it, but I don't give a flying rat's ass. Now, y'all have an absolutely wonderful day. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I don't know what the next holiday is, so fuck it all. I come by.
I come by. Thank you, Dame Bemrose.
And she did call back in. So.
She did. And actually, I have a video of this RC debauchery that she speaks of. She sent it to me in the back channel. And I was hella drunk last night, so didn't realize necessarily what she had sent me. But I do remember having a vague recollection of a conversation about a Traxxas vehicle and my desire to obtain one of these speedy little motherfuckers. But I need to have a lot more time to play with this and more money in case something goes epically wrong. Right now, all I have is this small drone that has video capability if I wanted to allow it to interact with an app on my phone. And you all know how much I love putting apps on my phone. So right now, the only thing this fucking thing does is I have a physical controller. And when I put the legs out and do all the thingy-thingy things, it goes up in the air and I can fly it up to the second floor where Phone Boy can catch it and release it, or I can do other things. Yeah, basically I'm not doing the camera function. The only reason I got it was to learn how to fly a drone so I could get a more expensive one, because I thought when we watched the 4th of July fireworks, the dude, whoever the person was, dude, chick, whatever, who had the drone that was controlling it really well and getting some epic footage of those fireworks, yeah, I want to do that shit next year. So that's why I got this, like, I think it was like a $40 drone knocked down to about $20 by the time we got done. It's totally, if it broke, I didn't spend that much to give a fuck. But it's definitely a good way to learn the controls on those things. So I'm glad that Dame Bremrose is out there misbehaving, having a great goddamn time with some RC vehicles and flying drones and things like that. And we love you, Lise. Have a great goddamn time doing it. And we want to hear what she called in with.
Yeah, that's right, because she followed up. So we're gonna play that now.
Okay, the first bookshelf. I have books, everything from Steve Barry to Ann Bishop to Gabrielle Horne. I also have a hairbrush for cats. Second bookshelf. Oh, God, you don't want to know how many freaking books are here. And I have a thing of catnip for Tasha and more books. Oh, did I say books? Okay, let's go to the fourth one. Now, these are the only ones in the living room. books, 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 books. A globe of the world on the top, books, a little bottle of Jägermeister. I don't know how old that is. I think it's about 15 years. Go to the left, books, 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 a kitten puzzle. That was a gift from my mother-in-law. Books, 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 software testing, metaprogramming Ruby, Cast in Secret by Michelle Segarra, who is one of my favorite authors. I have every single book written by that woman. Her and Ilona Andrews, R.J. Blaine, Raymond E. Feist. We've got Terry Pratchett. Hey, there's Sandman by Neil Gaiman. I did not realize I still had that here. Oh, and lots of Jim Butcher. Gotta have him. And then at the very top, from many, 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 many years ago, when we went to a Mariners game, I have a statue of Jay Buhner. I don't expect you to know who he is, but Jay Buhner. And the stuffed animal cat that was the last gift from my mother and father before my father passed away. That cat has not moved since 2007. I think that cat will not move for a long, long time. Anyway, that's what's on the bookshelves in the living room, which we call the library.
And a beaver with a Christmas tree up its ass.
Oh, and a beaver with a Christmas tree up its ass. Not shitting you, but that's not on the bookshelf. It is its own bookshelf. Anyway, love y'all. Bye. I've got some food to eat. Just got home. I'm exhausted. I'm already well over my 5,000 steps, and I've got some RC vehicles to put away, too. Bye!
Thank you, Dame Bemrose.
Thank you, Dame Bemrose. I love the fact we got a little bit of Sir Bemrose in the background right at the end there. Yeah. That was good
exactly.
shit.
Exactly. All right. So,
but like I said, this has literally become the what's on your bookshelf question, not your favorite. And I could not be happier. Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, that is exactly. Sometimes it's those happy little accidents that turn into great things, right?
Hey, so, like Bob Ross says, happy little trees, happy little accidents.
Happy little accidents. So we got one more call here. And by the way, if you are listening live and you have not called in yet, or even if you're listening on some sort of recording device. You can still call in, hopefully, to 253-237-3321 if Skynet hasn't been crashed at this point. By the time you listen to this. But anyway, let's play this last call right here.
Hey! What's up? This is a phone call, and I'm on it. Now I'm in your voicemail. Just fucking saying random shit and tying up the line for the most part. What's the favorite thing on my bookshelf? Probably books. You know. I like those. There's plenty of remixes of the dictionary that are worth going over. Yep. Most recently, I bought a little tarot book that I found at Ollie's that I just like the artwork in. And then, it's marketed as a homesteader book, but it's really just like some craft ideas and shit that I thought were neat. So, I picked those up. I missed last week's weigh-in topic. Favorite into summer activity? I don't know. Not being fucking miserable hot. Probably my favorite end of summer activity. Nice and... Get away from me. Fucking bees. So, not being miserable hot, being able to go outside for, you know, more of the day without feeling like your face is melting Yeah, that's a fun activity. It makes other activities more fun and bearable. But I also like being able to sit outside a little more, you know, there's a little less insects when it starts getting cool at night, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, I don't know. Bookshelves are cool. What's on your bookshelf? What's under your bookshelf? Does things go under your bookshelf? I got a lot of dust underneath mine and some puzzles that are actually put together, but we haven't glued them yet, so we slid them up under the bookshelf to be out of the way. So, yeah. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah. Thank you, Weirdo. That was awesome.
Oh, great. That is.
I do. I love hearing what's on people's bookshelves. And as Sir Bemrose points out, the dame pointed out there's still three other rooms with bookshelves that she has not gone through. So I would imagine that the amount of books, knickknacks, etc., that Dame Bemrose has is extensive.
Yes, exactly. Well,
but that's great.
Yeah, if she wants to tell us about it, or if anybody else wants to tell you about what's on your bookshelf, call 253-237-3321 and tell us about it. Well, and if anybody calls in between now and the time we get to the last call segment, we'll play it. But otherwise,
okay. So I do have to point out, though, if we're talking about multiples, that by happenstance I do have another bookshelf in my office. However, the only thing, and I'm not even going to include a picture because it's not worth it. The only thing that's on the bookshelf there, although it is a cute as shit, it's pink with white pillars. Don't hate me because I'm Phoenix. It's adorable. But all that's on it is literally textbooks from previous courses that I had to take, binders full of printouts and such from the classes. I think there's some Chinese incense that's on the bottom shelf that we bought off Amazon that, like, every fucking thing smells the same. Ew. Just saying. But, yeah, there's nothing really invigorating on my the pink and white bookshelf that I have. It's more the one that's connected directly to my work desk that has all the cute little knicky-knacky things that make me kind of one of the cool kids. I love the fact that my desk has that attached bookshelf. It was one of the, even though it's a gamer desk, it was one of the features that I found to be really important to have. Because, now, agree, disagree, pedalheads, but the stuff you have on your bookshelf is kind of personal. It sets the atmosphere for where that bookshelf is. Or maybe that's just me. That's how I treat my bookshelf, is there's things on it that make me smile. They make me feel good. There's a reason that when I start working on my schoolwork that I plug my salt lamp in, I turn my lava lamp on. You know, I've got the light strip, the RGB light strip that pulses to my music. I mean, if I took a picture of my desk, I've got a pretty rad setup to study at. A lot of college kids would be super jelly of my setup. I'm super lucky. And it really didn't even cost that much. It's just a bunch of, I think the desk was about $160 or so. And then it's just a whole bunch of other stuff that I've gotten from people or, you know, obtained myself. But I think your bookshelf is important.
Yeah.
It symbolizes who you are.
I need to have something. I need to have a bookshelf to have something on. The problem is that there's so much other furniture. Anyway, that's a whole different problem. But
again, this is where when we have the house, you will have a proper office. You will have everything you deserve.
Okay, so can you vamp for me while I go get the thing that I'm going to say because I actually have something that I want, but I'm going to show it to you and then because I have to go get it. So if you could.
Okay, so I'm so lost now about what Phone Boy the fuck is on about because I have no idea what he is going to grab or whatever. But anyway, I don't even want to know.
Yes, you do. And you should, and like I said, this is, look to your right.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we need to post a picture of that.
I'll take a picture. Sorry.
Yeah, so I forgot about something Phone Boy has here. Because Phone Boy doesn't have a bookshelf in his office. He has a dresser that, because this is a bedroom, essentially, and we live in a furnished, anyways, you guys already know. Casa Lotus does not belong to us, but And I do not remember. I believe it was from the flea market.
No, Chestnut Hill.
Was it Chestnut Hill?
No, it was Chestnut Hill. We did not buy this.
I thought we got it at the flea market. Anyways, it doesn't matter. Phone Boy's going to post a picture of it. On the dresser, he keeps a shadow box of sort. It has two wine glasses that are hanging from it that we put in there. It didn't come with it, sadly. And he also has a collection of handwritten notes that I've left him over the years. When I leave to go to work, I will literally take pen to paper and leave a note in front of his espresso machine, because I know that when he comes downstairs, that's the first place he's going to go. And he has a collection of these. And this is one of, apparently, the special things that means something to him. And I hadn't even really thought about it. I see it all the time. I guess I've just become kind of accustomed to it. But that box is actually very poignant because of what it says and the letters that are contained within it. You know, we're not trying to go down that whole, you know, smoochy trail. But apparently that's what's on your bookshelf and what, you know, what passes for a bookshelf in Phone Boy's office. But yeah, that's something that means something to you. And it is a beautiful piece that I had actually momentarily forgot that we had. It was one of the early things we purchased.
Yeah, and it's just, and when as those notes, because in the early part of this is where a lot of those notes are from like 2 or 3 years ago. They're not.
That's why I said accumulation of.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just where I've put them. And I figured, well, okay.
Yeah, because usually when I leave, you're literally in the doorway.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah, I'm not, yeah,
me
you,
off.
Yeah, you and I, yeah, say that our dynamic has changed somewhat.
But that's
regard.
Not to say that in the future, if I had to leave while you were doing a session or you were busy and couldn't see me off, that another physical note won't appear in the kitchen at your espresso machine.
Exactly. So, but yeah, that's where I kept it. And it just, it's just one of those things like, okay, well, you know, when you start your life over, you know, a lot of things start over. Anyway, I think it's time to move on from this topic and get high. I need to get high.
I want to get higher than God's nutsack, y'all.
I'll take a drink. And my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke. Reefer, you know, I'd relax as many other things. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But I do not freebase cocaine.
Well, maybe you don't, but God damn it, I do. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. What the fuck? Well, I've never done coke. Like, seriously.
Okay, well, all right. So who knew the Chiners were running grow operations that are all over the U.S., according to experts?
China is asshole!
Smoke weed every day.
Now, the House Homeland Security Subcommittee on Oversight, Investigations, and Accountability was briefed to the extent on which the Chinese Communist Party is aware of and funding illicit drug operations in the United States, and lawmakers were implored to take swift action to wipe out the expansive criminal network. Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics Director Donnie Anderson testified on Thursday that the impact of the marijuana black market in Oklahoma and throughout the country has had in recent years was unlike anything I'd ever encountered in my career.
Well, why don't you try fucking legalizing it there, dickhead Donnie?
Okay, we'll get to this. Okay, well, so, read the story here. Paul Larkin, there we go, a senior legal research fellow in legal and judicial studies at the Conservative Heritage Foundation think tank, said, addressing Chinese-fueled marijuana grows is a matter not just of public health, it's a matter of domestic and homeland national security. How is it different? How is it an issue of public health if... let me finish reading.
Here's the thing. I agree that it's a matter of domestic and homeland national security. Not going to lie. We don't need the motherfucking Chiners up in here any more than they already are with their spying-ass bullshit.
Okay, so... Anyway, in 2018, Oklahoma voters approved a measure that eradicated limits on medical marijuana grow operations, effectively allowing any resident of at least 2 years to grow unlimited marijuana in the state.
We're moving to fucking Oklahoma, bro.
Yeah, no shit. Foreign entities quickly began offering Oklahoma residents cash to use their name and property to stand up mass marijuana grow operations in greenhouses and inside homes.
Okay, so ultimately we should take all of those fucking residents who've been allowing this and round their asses up and put them all on sanction.
Yes,
next.
Between March 2024 and March 2025, Anderson estimated 87 million plants were grown within the state's borders. However, Oklahoma dispensaries reported selling roughly 2% of that amount. I mean,
oh, damn.
Yeah. The loosening of marijuana grow policies such as Oklahoma have also occurred in states like California and Maine, fueling similar grow operations across the country. We cover the ones in California. I haven't seen any of the ones in Maine yet. But the problem is not limited to drug cultivation and sales. The Chinese organized crime rings and money launderers who facilitate the entire operation coast to coast are responsible for bringing workers in from abroad to staff the grow sites, according to lawmakers. And yes, it's yes.
Why don't you fucking
legalize it? Seriously.
No. How about we just fucking take it completely off? Not just legalize. Stop it. I should be able to grow it like I grow a tomato. We scream about it and pound our fists about it every week. Just stop trying to put your restrictions on our bud. However, what I was going to say, and I can't fucking remember what it was, because it had something to do with this. I'll come back to it.
If it's important, it'll come around again, as we always do. But, I mean, look, I mean, this is the reason why, you know, illegal, this like, how about you just fucking stop? Yes, fucking stop already.
Yeah, what Billy Steed said, decriminalize it.
Yeah,
we needed to go further than decriminalization, though, Billy Steed. It needs to just absolutely be, like, there shouldn't be any regulations whatsoever. You should be allowed to just grow it like you grow a garden vegetable. I mean, within reason. Yeah. Obviously, we don't need acres and acres of weed being grown just because you fucking can. Okay? I'm just saying.
Yeah. My dad knew a place where the grass grew 6 feet tall. But anyway,
you can smoke it all, too. Yeah,
that's right. Anyway. Okay. But what
Sir Bemrose says, maybe you don't need that. Okay, Sir Bemrose, I get your point.
Okay,
look,
but of course...
I would probably be like Dorothy in the motherfucking poppies if there was ever acres and acres of weed ready to be harvested. I might have to just run my... At the risk of getting shot, run into that fucking field naked, just... I'm just saying.
All right, well... Okay, well, this next story, by the way, this, I think you need to read the headline for this because, reasons.
I will definitely do so because, you guys, you can't even, I hope the Bowl After Bowl kids are listening because apparently weed causes infertility, miscarriages, and genetic defects.
Bullshit.
Well, that's the claim. The evidence says otherwise.
How can they just lie like that?
I present to you the Wolf Pack. They got what, 5 kids?
Yeah, they now have 5s. And by the way,
I'm pretty fucking sure they haven't stopped token. Yeah. I don't think it's causing infertility.
No, I can assure you they're. I mean, we've seen. Okay, so we saw like 4 of the kids, maybe, or three or four of the kids.
I held John just before he turned a year old. The most he fell asleep on me. I melted.
Yeah.
Like, no lie, the most, and those girls, so well-behaved, so precious, and I can only imagine, knowing how well-behaved and wonderful that family is, that the additions are just as wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me again how it causes, and these are the most beautiful, well-behaved, I mean, healthy, happy children.
Bully Steed said Spencer's boys can swim. Yeah. They're fucking Olympic swimmers, apparently. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So tell me again how it causes infertility when you look at the bowl after bowl kids. By the way, yeah, bowl after bowl. What is it like? Ten central on
Tuesdays.
Yeah, something like that on the No Agenda stream. But
and quite honestly, there's not a damn thing wrong with those kids, that house, those parents. Good people. We've stayed with them. We've spent time with them. We've smoked with them. We have podcasted with them.
Naked, no less.
Naked, even. Yes.
No, there's no pictures. We're not doing that.
Oh,
anyway.
Hell no. And much respect, okay? Much respect.
Yeah.
But the point is, great people, I think this study is bullshit. But according to...
really?
I know. According to a new paper in Nature Communications, it looked at THC around eggs during in vitro fertilization and saw a small dip in the share of embryos that looked chromosomally normal in the lab. A local TV piece turned that into weed causes infertility, miscarriages, and genetic defects. That's not what the study showed. It didn't track pregnancies or babies and used leftover immature eggs in dishes. Meanwhile, big human studies find no slower time to pregnancy, and an in vitro fertilization cohort found no worse in vitro fertilization results. If you're trying to conceive or are pregnant, mainstream guidance says to pause use. Per the CDC, you know, Center for Disease Controls and, you know, Prevention of Your Health, and the ACOG. Now, I don't know who they are. Do you know who that organization is?
No, I actually do not know who the ACOG is. But
so the scary headlines go further than the data. Clinic records at one IVF center, they checked the fluid around eggs for THC leftovers. A small group tested positive, and those patients had a slightly lower rate of embryos that looked chromosomally normal in the lab. 60% versus 67%. Yeah, not that much difference. Now, that's a lab checkpoint, not a pregnancy. Dish experiments on leftover immature eggs? They put unused, not fully mature eggs in dishes with THC and watched. Some lab signals moved in a worrying direction. More wonky chromosome sorting gear at a higher dose. But several results, like more eggs with the wrong number of chromosomes, were too small and noisy to be sure. Bottom line, this shows a possible lab signal, not proof that cannabis users struggle to get pregnant or have more miscarriages. Clearly not. Dame DeLorean does not seem like she is losing babies. If anything, she is creating some of the most beautiful creatures on Terra Firma.
Yeah, so tell me again how this causes problems.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
The TV piece said infertility, miscarriages, genetic defects. The paper didn't measure any of those. It measured proxies in a lab and how embryos look under a microscope. Proxies can be useful, but they don't equal real-world outcomes.
No, they don't.
So at the end of the day, it's just absolute and unbelievable
bullshit.
Yeah, it
so
is.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. Exactly. So anyway, I think we can go to the tech segment. What do you think?
Oh, dangerous place to be.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm sure the AI that's going to try to detect mental illness has probably got its head up its ass. But how AI could actually do that?
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you
yeah, that's it. That, yeah, the study published in the wait a minute. Artificial intelligence could be used to analyze people's facial expressions and detect signs of depression, according to new research.
Right, because nobody who's depressed ever puts on a false face and a false smile.
Okay, this study published in the Journal of Scientific Reports found that the technology was able to track micro movements in people's facial muscles and found consistent patterns among people who reported feeling depressed. Now, the researchers say this kind of technology could be used to identify mental illness in people before clinical symptoms appear, allowing for early intervention. Now, Associate Professor Eriko Sugimori from Waseda University in Japan says that as concerns around mental well-being have been rising, I want to explore how subtle nonverbal cues, such as facial expressions, how they shape social impressions and reflect our mental health using artificial intelligence based facial analysis.
Here's the problem I have with this. I'm going to jump all up in this. How many on 2.5 Ben's stories have we reported about these LLMs, these AIs, who, when someone is telling them, you know, something's really not making all the connections upstairs, no, they're not encouraging, like, seek mental professional help. No, they're encouraging the psychosis. How is this good?
No, of course it's not good. Now, let's see. So our novel approach of short self-introduction videos and automated facial expression analysis can be applied to screen and detect mental health in schools, universities, and workplaces. By the way, how much electricity was used to do that? The researchers recorded 10-second introduction videos of 64 undergraduates in Japan and used the artificial intelligence system OpenFace 2.0, which tracks the movements and facial muscles to analyze the videos. So artificial intelligence analysis revealed specific patterns of eye and mouth movements, such as the inter-brow raiser, upper lid raiser, just lip stretcher and mouth opening actions that were more frequent in participants with subthreshold depression or STD, the study said.
Wow. Let me just pause you right there. You hear STD, you're not thinking depression. I want to point that out.
Yes, exactly. Well, I don't know. Yeah. There's a reason that the T in this case is lowercase.
Small.
Yes, exactly. To try to differentiate it from the other STD that we all grew up in saying, you know, just say no. Well, anyway, that's
Sir Bemrose points out a great point. The interbrow raiser sounds like a horror movie title.
Also,
it really kind of does.
Yeah, maybe exactly. So, okay, so the subtle muscle movements were strongly linked to those who had reported subthreshold depressive symptoms, which are less severe than major depressive disorder. Now, they also got another group of students to observe these videos and rate how expressive, friendly, natural, and likable the students seemed. Now, the results of this were actually consistent with the AI analysis. So students who had reported depressive symptoms were deemed less friendly, expressive, and likable than those who didn't report feeling depressed. Now, depression is often linked to reduced facial expressivity, according to the study, and this suggests that STD does not make people appear overtly negative, but rather tones down their positive expressivity. And I actually don't think that's wrong.
Well, it's actually kind of true, because if you think about when I quote zero out and I literally can just stare through you.
No.
It's kind of the same thing. Like, just being able to have no facial expression that gives away what you're thinking. People with depression do that all the time.
Yeah, so it's but that's the thing, and so I mean this is one of those situations where as long as it's checked by a human, right? I mean, I don't.
That's the key. Oh my God, yes, thank you for saying that, because I'm not trying to shit all over AI, although it's fun to do so. I think that if you're going to use this tool, it needs to have a human backup that can troubleshoot the fact that this is a computer. It does not have reasoning. It does not have emotions. You know what I'm saying. Here, Bully Steed points out, resting bitch face. Yes, I would love to know how an AI would handle resting bitch face. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so so let's see. I think we need to go on to the next story, though.
We're going to, because we want to know why government software remains a hacker's playground.
Nothing is actually impenetrable.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. Again, we know that the government is running COBOL as their programming language, and they want to transition to Rust, and we know why that's not a good idea. But there is a huge disparity in the public sector between those fixing security flaws quickly and those that are struggling to tackle the load. We're seeing a growing divide between leading departments fixing 50% of flaws in just over 3 months compared with laggards that are taking nearly a year to do the same. But why does this disparity exist? Well, one of the problems is the skills shortage. As with most industries, the digital skills gap continues to be a problem, and the wider developer shortage is having a knock-on effect on security debt. There's a varying degree of budget and skill across different government organizations, which, for an already time-poor security team, means an inconsistency in approach to security debt. Another is the presence to roll out new features to keep pace with the private sector, leaving many security fixes deprioritized unless they're deemed absolutely critical. More companies are sleepwalking into security debt because severity is not the main driver of flaw remediation. Lack of alignment across a fragmented industry means what is considered a priority also often varies from organization to organization. Finding flaws in the easy part? Well, but companies are drowning in security debt as they struggle to compete with a growing attack surface and increasingly sophisticated cyber intrusions. AI-generated code is silently compounding security debt across public sector supply chains. Does any of this surprise us? No. Along with the evolution of sophisticated AI tools, cyber flaws have become increasingly complex and difficult to fix. Out of the 80% of public sector applications that had at least one flaw, 62% of them contained a risk considered most dangerous in line with the CWE Top 25. The scale of hacking has outpaced human capacity to respond, leading to an increase in flaw remediation time, and in turn, a greater exposure to exploitation and cyber threat. As applications become bigger and incorporate more third-party components, the scope for potential flaws increases, making it more time-consuming to remediate issues. This exposure to breaches is set to increase as more teams adopt AI for code generation, despite the risks these models present. That should be the loudest part of this entire article, is the fact that these breaches are going to continue, and they're going to get worse and worse and worse as lazy-ass motherfuckers are adopting AI for their code generation. Goddamn, stop it. Do not make me go full 2.5 bends on you people today.
Yeah, well, let's not do that. But if you want to listen to 2.5 bends, you can go to 2.5bends.com. You can listen to it any time. But you can also hear us do it live every other Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on the, Lotus Effect. No, I'm sorry. It's that. I need to make sure I use the right one. 2.5bends.live. There we go. Yeah.
That's right. Now, a recent report found that nearly half, or 45%, of the top 100 LLMs create coding with security vulnerabilities. Who's surprised at that? There being no real improvement across newer or larger models. Now, we talk about it all the time. We actually, here at 2.5bends / the Lotus Effect / whatever you want to call us, we think that these vulnerabilities are actually being put in on purpose. We truly do.
Well, I mean, let's just say that it seems like that there's not a lot of care in making sure they don't get there in the first place. They just seem to sort of run. And so if you're kind of looking around and going, this has been a problem. And it's been a problem since the beginning, though. I mean, it seems like nobody cares about this. Why does nobody care about this? Why is this problem? And so it almost seems like it's by design in some way. I don't know. I mean, why would every organization have this problem? It seemed like, and we keep creating more technologies that have even more security vulnerabilities in them. And so, I mean, fuck, how can somebody not look at that and go, maybe it's intentional? I don't know if that's really true or not. I don't have any smoking guns, but just look around and kind of go, why is it that every time that we get another Reboot Tuesday, if you got a Windows machine, right? Why is it that every time there's like 50, 100 plus, some of the stuff is maybe lower severity, but there's usually a couple of like high severity, like being exploited in the wild shit. It happens all the fucking time. Why is it that Microsoft and any of these other companies haven't gotten their shit together and stopped doing it? Well, maybe they don't give a fuck about it. That's the only thing I can think of, because if they actually gave a fuck about it, they'd do something about it.
No, there's absolutely no integrity in cybersecurity anymore. And with almost 80% of the public sector organizations having already accrued some level of security debt, the issue is only going to worsen without action. With third-party flaws being one of the biggest contributors to security debt, it's time companies thoroughly evaluated the third-party software with which they're engaging. Avoiding those riddled with flaws by using software comparison analysis, or SCA. It can slash major issues across applications. Absolutely. Scan your code, you lazy fucks. It doesn't take that long. There are tools that will do this for you. It takes a fraction of the time it's going to take to rebuild your shit when you get owned. Just saying. True prioritization is also essential. If everything's a priority, then nothing is. And working on the flaws that are most severe as soon as possible is a quick win for poor time developers. And it's honest. If you're not putting in the time it takes to do it right, you're going to get bit in the ass. It happens time after time after time. And that's why we keep seeing these stories in the news.
Exactly. How do we fix it? Unfortunately, this is, organizations are doing this, but, and actually it's funny because I have a friend elsewhere in the world who he does full stack development, and he's actually been out of work for about 6 months at this point because he refuses to work for companies that actually are, that are doing shit with people's data. He's very much a kind of a person that is actually, very much, like, look, I very much along the lines of how I am, which is, I understand what I'm working with here. I'm not going to collect data I don't need. I'm not going to do things that aren't necessary. And we're going to, we're going to do things right. And the problem is that all these organizations want to collect all the data all the time. And he's like, no, I'm not doing this.
There are still people who have integrity.
Yes. I mean, I'll even mention Sir Bemrose here. I mean, yeah, there's a reason he's doing what he's doing now. It's because he couldn't find a company that actually the whole thing was a burnout.
He's made no bones about the fact that Microsoft fucking roasted him. They absolutely burned him out. They took a fantastic coder, an amazing mind, and fucking strip fucked it to a degree where all he can do is bitch about tech now, because working in that industry would be way too stressful and hazardous to his health.
Yeah.
And that's sad, because Sir Bemrose is a great mind.
Yeah. And honestly, like I had this sort of rant a couple of weeks ago where I just like, look, I got into this, when I got into this industry, it was, I thought it was fun, right? When I was a kid, I mean, all the technology was fun and it enabled people to communicate. I was, and this thing called the internet came along and everybody got in and was like, yeah, this is fucking great. Well, okay, 30 years later, I'm looking at this and I'm going, what the fuck happened to this?
Yeah, with tears in your eyes, you've literally looked at me and said, this isn't fun anymore.
No, this is not fun anymore. And
that's sad for someone who, from the age of 4 years old, has been whacking on a keyboard and interested in computers, has done as many amazing things as you have, for you, phone boy, to take the stand. This isn't fun anymore. Technology's gone way off the rails. It's all about the money. Nobody gives a shit because there are no guardrails. It's natural selection. It's Wild West out there. And that's sad, because to see someone with the intelligence and the integrity of people like Phoneboy, Sir Bemrose, and other people out there who just literally can't even. I know who Phoneboy's talking about, the friend that he has, in other parts of the world. And that's a hard... Because this guy's not just dealing with the fact that he's out of work. He's also dealing with other things in his personal life that are really fucking beating him down.
You think my divorce is bad. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Get a divorce in a foreign country with an evil bitch ex. Oh, wait. You had an evil bitch ex. Never mind.
Yeah, anyway. But my point...
Yeah, we're not talking about that.
We're not talking about that. At some point you asked me, would you... would I still do this? I'm like, I'm kind of looking around. I'm going, well, the only reason I'm still in this industry is because I managed to somehow navigate my career to a point where I don't have to. I'm not exposed to the worst of it most of the time, right? I'm kind of in my own little bubble. I'm doing very specific things, and for the most part, I'm still happy doing what I do, because like I'm helping people, and that's something I've always liked doing. So the fact that somebody else is paying me well to do it, I'm not going to complain that much. But I mean, I'm looking around the overall industry and I'm like, I don't know if I would, if I were trying to enter this today, I'm not so sure I'd want to do it.
It's one of the reasons why you and I have had that conversation behind the mic with my own personal studies, because the things that are coming up for my coursework are things that you may be aware of, you may even have experience in, but this shit wasn't around when you started. And it almost seems like for all the forward advancement, we're going backwards.
Yeah, well, because all of that has taken us farther and farther away from that which we all need.
The truth.
The truth, yeah.
You can say it. With every advancement, it brings us further away from the actual truth. And that's exactly what they want.
Yes. And, I'm all about having access to the information and the people. I mean, fuck, Phoenix and I met because of the technology. So it's not all bad. Right. But
it is all in how you use it.
Exactly. And how and when you use it. Right. We talk about being mindful. Right. This is something that you and I have talked about, is being mindful in our use of tech. Right. I'm doing things in some cases. Yeah, I carry around two phones. Why do I carry around two phones? Well, because I don't need, and sometimes, yeah, I mean, I'm separating out parts of my life, right? And sometimes that's necessary when you're trying to do things. I'm trying to, like, okay, on the weekend, that phone that's involved with work goes sits over here. I don't touch it until Sunday night, right? But I'm using the technology in a way to try to mitigate some of the issues that are come with having the technology, right? But it's putting those boundaries in place and saying, no, I'm not going to download a fucking app just to view something I could view on a fucking web page, right? There's no reason to do that.
You know, I didn't bring on 2.5 Ben's last night, but I do want to poke in before we go into the junk drawer, since we're still talking about tech, is the fact that a lot of companies are turning to AI to choose their candidates. And that's a big fucking problem, because now companies are realizing that LinkedIn and places like that, it's a lot of outdated information. So they're using AIs to scrape this shit to find candidates. And that in and of itself terrifies me, because the candidate who may be most best suited for the position may not be the one who has that shiny degree and all the accolades attached to
it. Or may not even
it.
Be on LinkedIn.
That too. Yeah. That too.
Yeah. So it's
ruining the hiring process when you have artificial stupidity over there deciding who they think the best candidate for your position is, just because, oh, well, Sally Stupid has a fucking degree in how to suck pond water through her asshole. Well, she's the best candidate. Well, not really.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we could go on and on about this. I think we should probably go to the junk drawer now.
I think it's a good idea.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Yes, well,
this is a great story.
This is a
great story.
Okay, so Spirit Airlines plane gets too close to Air Force One. Pay attention! Yeah, so this incident happened on the morning of Tuesday, September 16th, 2025. It involves an air traffic control transmissions that happened with New York Center. Air Force One carrying President Trump was flying in this airspace as he was heading to London, as was a Spirit Airlines flight. Now, as you would expect, Air Force One gets a bit more separation from planes than other aircraft, and the two planes were flying at roughly the same altitude and at an angle where they were moving closer to one another. So the air traffic controller told the Spirit pilots to turn 20 degrees to the right in order to vector for traffic. However, the pilots didn't respond immediately, and this instructions had to be given four times. Spirit 1300, turn 20 degrees right, vectors traffic and descent. Pay attention, Spirit 1300, turn 20 degrees right. Spirit 1300, turn 20 degrees right now. Spirit Wings 1300, turn 20 degrees right immediately. After the fourth transmission, the pilots finally responded, and the air traffic controller said, pay attention. Now, a short while later, the air traffic controller said, Spirit 1300, traffic is off your left wing by 8 miles, 747. I'm sure you can see who it is. Keep an eye out for him, white and blue. Yeah, well, that's what Air Force One looks like. Then when the Spirit pilots were handed over to the next air traffic controller, the previous one finished the transmission by saying, pay attention, get off the iPad.
I think that's great. Kudos to that air traffic controller for riding that pilot's ass. Get off the fucking iPad, you mental midget. You have an entire flying metal tube full of human souls that you are responsible for. Pay the fuck attention.
Well, yeah, and I was looking at, so in the article, the guy this is one of the travel blogs I still follow for whatever reason, but you get some just dumb shit on the airlines, right? And this is one of those things, and it's like, okay, so now the guy was making some comments about the fact that maybe they were in the middle of switching pilots at that time, you know, somebody's in the back. I'm going, bullshit.
Four times. That's why you have a co-pilot, numbnuts.
Yeah, exactly. So somebody was on, and whatever the case is, like, yeah, they should have gotten fucking yelled at for that.
100%.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and you wonder why I don't want to travel, folks.
Yeah, like Bemrose says, there isn't an excuse. I agree completely.
Yes, there's a reason they have two pilots in the deck at a minimum in the thing, but okay.
So I want to talk about this story, which it was kind of a throwaway when I found it. Sent it to Phoneboy, and he was like, oh, this is definitely something we need to cover, because Moon Helium deal is the biggest purchase of natural resources from space.
And still the government won't admit they faked a whole moon landing.
We haven't mined on the moon yet, but companies are already buying its resources. Finnish tech firm Bluefors, a maker of ultra-cold refrigerator systems critical for quantum computing, has purchased tens of thousands of liters of helium-3 from the moon, spending above $300 million through a commercial space company called Interlune. The agreement, which has not been previously reported, marks the largest purchase of a natural resource from space.
Hey, wait a minute. Who owns the moon? I mean, okay.
It's a damn good question.
Okay, this is kind of like selling the Brooklyn Bridge.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, so because the moon is up there, right? Okay, yeah, some human can claim that they own it and maybe do some stuff, but I'm going like, how can you sell something on the moon? You don't own the fucking moon.
Now, wait for it, okay? Because Interloon, a company founded by former executives from Blue Origin and an Apollo astronaut, has faced skepticism about its mission to become the first entity to mine the moon, which is legal thanks to a 2015 law that grants U.S. space companies the right to mine on celestial bodies. Y'all, we can't make this ridiculous bullshit up. We wish we could. But advances in its harvesting technology and the materialization of commercial agreements are gradually making this undertaking sound less like science fiction. Blue Force is the third customer to sign up with an order of up to 10,000 liters of helium-3 annually for delivery between 2028 and 2037. The deal is the strongest signal we can figure out that says there's a demand for helium-3, said Rob Mayers, CEO of Interloon and former president of Blue Origin. Now, Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos owns WAPO. All I had to hear was Bezos' name, and the rest of this fucking story made perfect sense on what a stack of shit it is. So this isn't balloon helium. Helium-3 is lighter than the helium-4 gas featured at birthday parties. It's also much rarer on Earth, but moon rock samples from the Apollo days hint at its abundance there. Interloon has placed the market value at 20 million with an M per kilogram. Well, that's about 7,500 liters. It's the only resource in the universe that's priced high enough to warrant going out to space today and bringing it back to Earth, Meyerson said. Apparently, helium-3 can supercool the gigabits used in quantum...
They're called qubits, actually.
I'm sorry, that's a Q?
Yeah, that's a Q, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that was a Q. Well, maybe you're fucking...
Yeah, the font is... Yeah.
You know what? No. If you had put it like that... The point is, it can super cool the qubits using quantum computing.
Yeah, and that's...
And there's a bunch of it on
the
moon.
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of what the story basically said. Now, here's the thing that I still kind of... I kind of look at this and I go, okay, this is all for... By the way, this is all for something AI-related, which is... And so I'm sitting here kind of going, okay, so... We're not just content enough to fuck up our own planet. We got to go fuck up the fucking moon.
That's what we do.
That's exactly what we do. And why? I mean, seriously. Like, so tell me again how AI is anything that's good for the environment. Anybody who claims to be doing for the environment should not use AI because the amount of resources it uses is they're fucking strip. I'm going to strip mine other fucking planets.
And our own moon. You do realize, guys, that the moon is extremely essential to us here on Earth because it controls our tides. You start fucking with that biome. Think about what's going to happen. I don't want to think about that because here's the thing. It may not happen in our lifetime, probably won't, but the lifetime of our children or our children's children is at risk from these fucking cunts. I just want to point that out.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. And anyway, I think we've ranted enough about that. It's by the way, it's time to do the last call.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Oh, God.
We have no more voicemails, but you get, because of the stories that we have, I'm going to have you do the first last call story.
I have no problem with that. And I think it's actually kind of funny that you put me in line for this particular one because watch out, Oregon! Some stores are selling magic mushroom edibles with no psilocybin.
Fool you!
Researchers at Oregon State University analyzed 12 edibles, 11 gummies, and a chocolate bar sold in Portland stores under the label Magic Mushroom Edibles. They were purchased and tested at Rose City Labs in collaboration with OSU and Shimadzu, the company that supplied the analytic equipment. The results were disturbing. None of the products contained psilocybin, the classic active compound in shrooms. Although the sample sizes were small, the extent of mislabeling made the findings significant. Yeah, if you're not detecting any fucking psilocybin, I don't care how big that sample is. It should have some non negligible amount of psilocybin showing up in those test results. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, all right.
And fuck, Oregon, magic mushrooms are legal. It's the only damn state in the 50 that I know that mushrooms are legal.
They legalized everything in Oregon, like, pretty much.
And I know, and they're rolling it back. We've talked about that fact because it didn't go so well.
Yeah.
But irrelevant to the fact, like, come on, guys. You've got a perfect market to make some kick-ass mushroom edibles, and you're fucking off? Really? That's shameful.
Exactly. Well, all right. So this is also this is the only sort of death and entertainment part of this segment that we got. Monkees musician Bobby Hart, who wrote "Last Train to Clarksville" and other some songs, died at the age of 86. Take the last train to Clarksville. Yeah. So Bobby Hart has died at the age of 86 at his home in Los Angeles after his health declined following a hip break last year. Now the musician
his
wrote
health, not his death.
Yeah. So. The musician wrote songs for the popular 1960s pop band The Monkees, which consisted of Mickey Dolenz, Davy Jones, Michael Nesmith, and Peter Tork. Hart worked on their theme song for the TV show simply titled The Monkees. He also wrote the ending song. No, he didn't write that song. Actually, the ending song, it's kind of interesting that the song I think they used for the ending of the Monkey, or they might have used it. I don't know. They should have used it anyway, but it's for Pete's sake. We'll play that in shit in Studio 33. But anyway, this is it's kind of funny. If you get to, when the Monkees started, right? The Monkees were a fucking TV band. They became a real band at the end, you know. So anyway, yes. you're having fun over there. This is what you get for you know, you tell me not to do certain things and then you go do some things yourself there. Nice execution, doing terrific there, hun.
I'm redder than a beet over here because that broke your sound gate.
Yeah, well, it works that way.
All right, goddammit, compose. Because Hackers is turning 30. The story behind the cult cyber fairy tale.
Fight the planet!
Hackers celebrates its 30th anniversary this year with a deluxe new 88 Films home media release and a pair of screenings at London's Prince Charles Cinema on September 18th. It occurred. Sadly, I wish we could have caught that. Damn, that would have been awesome. So the institution refers to it as possibly the first movie where the nerds were the cool kids. And I totally agree with that. I love this movie. But it's not the only reason why this ultra-stylish cult classic about teen computer hackers in Manhattan caught up in a nefarious tech whiz's corporate conspiracy has built such a loyal following in the years since its release.
Yeah, no, so it's funny because so
you and I actually watched this movie. Yeah, I forced you to sit and watch it.
Yeah, so it was funny because I didn't, so the movie I remember watching kind of around this time was Sneakers. The only reason I watched it was because because I was taking a class in cryptography at the time.
Cerveza is not wrong. Fucking Angelina Jolie was smoking.
Yes,
in that movie.
Exactly. But for whatever reason, I had not seen this movie. So it was not something that was in my ethos. And so when you brought it to me, I'm like, no, I hadn't heard this. And so, yeah, we watched it.
It's a fun movie. I understand the authenticity of it is fucking negative numbers.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's pretty much any tech thing can kind of go on that premise. I mean, the only show I've ever seen that got the tech pretty much right was Mr. Robot,
which yeah. and they went to
great lengths, right? There was some stuff in the first season that was a little bit, you know, if you squinted hard enough, somebody like me would look at that and go, yeah, that's probably not.
Yeah, but it's still a quality show.
Yeah, honestly.
As far as, you know, Hollywood drivel and bullshit goes, Mr. Robot was, and I wish at the time that it was actually on that I had watched it. I mean, yes, we own the entire season or seasons of it because I bought them on DVD because that's how much I enjoy that show. And it has been beneficial in some ways with the stuff I've learned in school.
Yeah, well, it's also been great for the show because there's a lot of fucking great clips from that thing.
Hell yes. But honestly, that movie, I mean, Hackers, it's a fun-ass film, okay? Despite its complete inability to be accurate, despite the fact that at the time there's so many faux pas that as anyone who knows anything about tech can look at and be like, are you fucking kidding? If you were going for authenticity,
they weren't doing that, but that's normal. But
I mean, there's definitely something about like a conglomerate of hackers all getting together and being like, look, this one central fuck bag needs to pay for their shit. It kind of reminds me of Evil Corp and Mr. Robot. The whole premise is, let's take down this big dickback organization that needs, you know, that basically is untouchable if it's not for the underdog, you know, the little guy. That's how I saw this movie, and I think that's why it's still so endearing to me.
All right. Well, okay, so here's, all right, so this story, well, I literally can't even. It says, I almost called 911 the first time my girlfriend orgasmed. This can't be normal.
Yes! Yes! Oh! Yes! 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 Yes!
Yes. So this is from an advice column. I've been with my girlfriend for 5 months, and she does everything during sex that I think warrants an evaluation by a medical professional. Every time she has an orgasm, she comes close to blacking out. The first time this happened, I was ready to call 911, but she came too. She says it's just a quirk of hers. I say you should get checked out just to be safe. Have you ever heard of anything like this before, and would seeing a doctor be a good idea?
No! Seeing a doctor would not be a good idea. Leave your fucking girlfriend alone. If you're bringing her to that brink, bro, own that shit. Love that shit. The fact that your dick is bringing her to the point of blackout? Bro, that's cred. Mad cred, not a medical condition.
Yeah, and on that note...
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it, I gotta go.
Yeah, fuck it, I gotta go.
Especially after that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, so, you know, we're gonna yeah, I think once I hit the button here, we're gonna head on to Studio 3, because you know what?
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you. I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.